श्रीमश्रीपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान अभयचरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जयम त्रिलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की आनंदगोड़ वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकूर की प्रेम सहो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोव गोविनाथ श्यामकुंड राधा गुंडगिरि गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगमाई की यमुनामाई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्तवृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरी श्री 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 गुरु श्री गौरंग ऑल ग्लोरी श्री श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिन् निधि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवी गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदान् सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमाओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणे नमाओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तसिद्धांत सरस्वती नामिने श्रीवर्षभानुविदेवी दैताय कृपाब्दये कृष्णसम्बन्ध विज्ञानं दायिने प्रभवे नमः माधुर्योज्ज्वल प्रेमाद्या श्रीरूपानुगभक्तिदा श्रीगौरकरुणाशक्ति विग्रहाय नमोऽस्तुते नमस्ते गौरवाणि श्रीमूर्तये दीनधारिणे रूपानुगविरुद्धाव सिद्धान्तद्वन्द्वहारिणे नमो गौरकिशोराय साक्षाद् वैराग्यमूर्तये विप्रलम्बरसाम्बोधे पदाम्बुजाय ते नमः नमो भक्तिविनोदाय सच्चिदानन्दनामिने गौरशक्तिस्वरूपाय रूपानुगावराय ते गौराविर्भवभूमेस्त्वं निर्दोष्टा सज्जनप्रियाः वैष्णवा सर्वभौम श्री जगन्नाथाय ते नमः वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो महावदान्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदायते कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्नि गौरत्वशे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकम् भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशात्विकं हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगल्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते सुरतौ पाङ्गोर्मम मन्दमदेर्गति मत्सर्वस्व पदां भोजौ राधा मदनमोहनौ वृन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमाद श्रीमन्द्रत्नाकरसिंहासनस्थौ ശ്രീമദ്രാധാ ശ്രീല ഗോവിന്ദ ദേവോ പ്രഷ്ടാലിബി സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി. ശ്രീമന്നാസരസാരംഭി വംശീവടതട സ്ഥിത കൃഷ്ണൻ വേണുസ്വനേർ ഗോപേർ ഗോപിനാഥ ശ്രീയേ സ്തുനാഹ. തഗാഞ്ജന ഗൗരാംഗി രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീയദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ. ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതം ഭഗവതം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവദ്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം. സ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണം പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയം പ്രദീപാഹം. പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമാം. സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത്. വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദ്ദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും. ശ്മദ്രോണതട ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ മഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുലാം. അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവാം. പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാസംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകേ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്പേബീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരതപങ്കജം കലിമലപ്രധ്വം സിനശ്രേയസേ. മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം ഭംഗും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവേർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദക്രമോപനിഷദേർഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഃ. ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. അഹം ആത്മാ ഗുഡാകേശ സർവഭൂതാശയസ്ഥിത അഹം ആദ്യം ച മദ്യം ച ഭൂതാനാം അന്തമേവ ച. വി ഹാവ് ബീൻ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് ദാറ്റ് വേഴ്സ് ലാസ്റ്റ് ഫ്യൂ ക്ലാസ്സസ് ആൻഡ് പ്രോബബ്ലി യു ഹാവ് ഗോട്ട് ദി മെസ്സേജ് ഫ്രം ദാറ്റ് വേഴ്സ് ദാറ്റ് ദി ഫേസ്റ്റ് ക്ലാസ് ഡിവോട്ടി is one who sees Krishna within the heart, within one's own heart. And there also we mentioned that the three grades of devotees or three types of devotees mentioned in the Bhagavadam Ekadasha Skandam, which refers to Sarvabhudeshu Yapashyet Bhagavad Bhavam, that is in correspondence with this verse, with the Sarvabhudeshu Yapashyet Bhagavad Bhavam Almana. That verse is in relationship with this Ahamalma Gudakesha in the Bhagavad Gita. You can see from the meaning very clearly that how they relate to each other. Also, the verses in the Kapilopadesham, Kapila Maharshi's instructions to Devahuti Devi, where Kapila Maharshi said to her that Maitreya Abhinnena Chakshusha, we have seen in that 29th chapter few verses which refers to that. So, one where Kapila Maharshi says, without seeing Krishna who is present in everyone's heart as Antaryami, and without showing that respect for that towards others, whatever he does to me in the form of deity worship is actually an insult. That is how Kapila Bhagavan puts that in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Maitreya Abhinnena Chakshusha, he says there. Sarvabhudeshu yapash sarvab saham sarveshu bhudeshu bhudalma avastita sada tamam ajnyaya avajnyaya mam marthya kurude archa vidambanam. Very important words. Aham, exactly the same thing what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, Kapila Vasudev says to Devahuti Devi, Aham sarveshu bhudeshu bhudalma avastita sada tam avajnaya mam marthya kurude archa vidambanam. Kurude archa vidambanam. Anyone who, without recognizing Krishna's presence inside, simply inside this body, simply gets busy with the worship of the deity and thinking that he is going to reach perfection, Krishna says, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Because this is the goal. Deity worship is a means to get here. It is not deity worship is the goal. Tam avajnayamam martya kurude archa vidambanam yomam sarveshu bhudeshu sandam almanam ishwaram hitvarcham bhajade maudhyad bhasmanyova juhadisa. And then he also mentioned later, Athamam Sarveshu Bhudeshu Bhudalmanam Kritalayam. Kritalayam Arhaya Dhanamanabhya Maitreya Abhinena Chakshusha. Without recognizing Krishna's presence in Sarveshu Bhudeshu as the place of residence, of Krishna's place of residence, Arhayad, and pleasing that person as Sandaryami, Arhayad Dhanamanabhyam, Maitreya Abhinena Chakshusha, without seeing that you are being different from them, from Krishna's presence inside. That is what it is mentioned there. Kurude Archa Vidambanam, he says. It's all a joke, in other words. Kurude Archa Vidambanam, that's the word. So, this has to be understood properly, because this does not mean that you have to give up deity worship, or chanting the holy name, or going to the temples. But it should not go to that extreme or in that direction also. The idea behind that is to tell us that the goal that is to realize Krishna inside. And that does not mean that temple is not required, deity worship is not required. Sometimes what happens that people will read these verses and say, I'm seeing Krishna in everyone's heart, I don't need to go to the temple anymore, or I don't need to worship the deity. But the purpose of going to the temple, chanting the holy name and deity worship, everything, that to develop that bhakti inside, and by that anusandhanam means that follow, flow inside, that to see Krishna's presence in the heart of everyone as the Antaryami inside Narayana or Sarvabhudashaya Sthita, one should be able to see. So in other words, purpose of all the other processes is to bring us to this goal of seeing presence of Krishna within the heart of everyone. That is first class devotion, first class bhakti. Sarvabhudeshu yapashyen Bhagavad Bhavam Almana Bhudhani Bhagavat Yasha Savai Bhagavadottama. Bhagavadam says like that. That is first class devotee. In other words, in all situations, in all living entities, one who can see Krishna's presence in them our Krishna awareness inside, then that awareness is his own very soul who is within himself. One who sees like that, he is known as a first-class devotee. That is that clear definition in that verse, isn't it? Sarva bhudeshu yapashyed bhagavad bhavam altmana. Bhudani bhagavadi esha savai bhagavadottama. That verse is very clear definition of a devotee. Sarva bhudeshu yapashyed bhagavad bhavam altmana. Bhudani bhagavatyalma esha bhagavadottama. Bhagavadottama is first-class devotee. Sarva bhudeshu, in all living entities, pashyet bhagavad bhavam. In all living entities, bhagavad bhavam. And bhudani bhagavati altma. And all living entities are within him as the soul. All that Krishna's presence in other living entities. First one has to realize within oneself. And then he will see that Krishna who is within the heart is present in everyone. That is the way it happens. He won't see first in everyone. First he has to see within himself. After that he will realize Krishna who is present within the heart is present in everyone else as Andaryami. That's what it Bhudhani Bhagavatyalma Esha Basavai Bhagavadottama mentions like that there. So one who sees that Krishna's Swarupam, Krishna's form as his own soul, as Atma Swarupam, and that is mentioned here as the that Atma Swarupam, that is a first-class devotee's nature. So, first-class devotee's definition, if one asks somebody asks that question, the answer to that is this verse. That is first-class devotee. And then, after that, there is next grade, who is a little lower than that, who is known as the Madhyama Adhikari or Madhyama Bhaktan. What is his position? He has bhakti towards Krishna. Bhakti towards Krishna. He has friendship towards other devotees. And those who do not have bhakti, he has compassion for them. They are not developing any bhakti for Krishna. That compassion for them. And those who are offensive, who are critical of Krishna consciousness, towards them an indifference. Indifference to them. Such a devotee is called the middle order or Madhyama Bhakta. Madhyama Bhakta. Middle devotee or second class devotee, you can say. And then lastly, Hari Maharshi says there, the one who sees Krishna in the temple and only in the temple Krishna is there, where deity is worshipped. He has got Shraddha there. His Shraddha is only in the temple and the deities. That is Prakrita Bhakta. That is the unrefined, you can say. Unrefined, very coarse bhakti, that is. That means, even seeing Krishna there is also a vibhuti of Krishna. And a person who goes to the temple, only when he is in the temple, he has some feeling for bhakti. And only at that time, only when go to holy places, only then he feels bhakti. Rest everything in the world is different for him. In other words, that is a situation, you can take it that there is some trace of bhakti in that person. Some trace of bhakti in that person. Nothing is criticized, that's what you have to notice. Nothing is rejected here. So, at least there, when they go to the temple, there is a feeling there, inside, that Krishna is there in the deity form. So when that knowledge becomes developed and due to practice of Krishna consciousness, later on it can become a perfectional stage of pure Krishna consciousness. This is only the beginning. So because this, it is like that when Melpatur spoke to Krishna, in Narayaniyam he mentions it like this, Bhudeshu Todaikyam Smriti Samadhigadau Nadhiga Rothunachel Tol Premam Tolga Maitri Jada Madhishagraba Dulsubuyad Upecha Archayam Vasam Archam Kudugamurudaram Shraddhaya Vardhadame തുൽസം സേവി തഥാഭി ദ്രുതമുപലഭതി ഭക്തലോകോത്തമത്വം. നാരായണീയം മേൽപ്പത്തൂർ സേസ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ ദാറ്റ് ഹി സേസ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ ദാറ്റ് മേക്ക് മീ എ ഡിവോട്ടി ഓഫ് ദാറ്റ് കാറ്റഗറി വിച്ച് വൺ ഭൂദേശേഷു ത്വദൈക്യം സ്മൃതി സമധിഗതൗ നാധികാരോധുനാ ചേൽ. Then if you make me a devotee of this first class category, what is that? Bhudeshesu todaikyam, that in all the living entities, seeing Krishna's presence who is within my heart, give me that realization of your presence within me, and also realization of Krishna within, and that same Krishna who is present in everyone else's heart. So bhudeshesu todaikyam smriti samadhi gadau, please, that is what I am praying for, he said to Krishna. Nadhigarodhuna chel, if that is not possible, if this is not possible, then what is the next thing I will ask you for? Tul premam tulka maitri jadam adishukriba dulsubuyad upeksha. If this is not possible, then the next thing, tul premam, I have at least love for you. Then tulka maitri, to your devotees, friendship. Jadamadisha kripam, those who are innocent, those who have no bhakti towards them, jadamadisha kripa, gray or bhakti or compassion for them. Dulso bhuyat upekshaha. Dulso means those who are envious, who has no interest and at the same time very critical towards them, indifference. So if the first one is not possible, but Melpathur says to Krishna, at least offer me this second one, second choice. First choice, what I would like to have is Bhudeshutodaikyam Smriti Samadhigado Nathikam. That is the first choice. That to remember, to realize the Krishna's presence within me, and also realize Krishna's presence in all other living entities, all Bhudam, all living entities. Bhudeshutodaikyam Smriti. If that is not possible, smriti samadhi gado nadhigarodhuna chel. If that is not possible, tul premam tulga maitri, love towards you, friendship to devotees, jada madhisha kripa, and then compassion to all those who are ignorant or indifferent to Krishna consciousness. Dulso bhuyat upeksha, those who are envious towards them, completely indifference. If that is not possible, he says, Archayam vasam archam kutukam urudaram shraddhaya vardhadam me. If these two are not possible, then the last option I would ask is, at least get me attached to the deity. Archayam vasam archam, at least let me get attracted to the deity worship, says Melpathur to Krishna. If the other two is not possible, if I am not qualified for those two, at least give me this third one. Archayam vasamarcham kutukamurudaram shraddhaya vardhadame. At least my shraddha in the worship of the deity, let it get better. Tulsam sevi tathabi drudamupalabhade bhakta lokottamatvam. Somehow or the other, in your service, let me develop that progress and make me a first class devotee. So you can see all the great devotees, they have followed this process. First, realizing the self within and seeing the self within everyone else, Krishna's presence in everyone else. That is exactly what Krishna is saying in that verse. Aham alpa guda kesha sarva bhuta shayastida aham adyam cha madhyam cha bhutanam andameva cha. This realization is the perfection. And if that is what Krishna says also later on about first class devotee, what does Krishna says? Nirabeksham munim shandam nurvairam samadarshinam anuvrajamyaham nityam puyeye tyangrirenubhi. In the Bhagavatam, 14th chapter, isn't it? Nirabeksham, he has no desires at that time. Nurvairam, he has no any ragam or dvesham towards anybody. Samadarshinam, he is seeing equally everywhere. Samadarshinam means what? This state. We are seeing Krishna within and that presence of Krishna in everyone else. That is samadarshitvam. Nurvairam sanum samadarshinam. Krishna says, anuvrajamyaham nityam. I follow that person. Puyeye tyangrire nubhi. I'll take the dust from his feet and put it on my head, Krishna says, to purify myself. This is Krishna's, how much Krishna value those devotees, the first class devotee. So there is a difference among the devotees. There is a category of 1, 2 and 3. And that difference we have to know very well. What is the first class, what is second class and what is the third class? If you always keep the company of the third class, you will remain in the third class. You will never move on from there. You will think that that is the perfection. And that means that Ishware etadadini adineshu balisheshu dushalsucha premam maitri kripa upeksha yal karodisa madhyama. Bhagavatam says like that. And then from the last category he mentions there archayame vahareye shradbhujam ya shraddaye hade nadad bhakteshu janyeshu sabhakta prakrita smradaha. Prakrita bhaktan. Prakrita bhaktan means very unrefined. He has just come to the bhakti process. And so therefore his archaya meva haraye. He will be very busy with the worship of the deity in the temple. All his shraddha is there. And nadhat bhakteshu cha anyeshu. But he doesn't care for anybody else. Others they can go to hell. That's his mood. Nadhat bhakteshu cha anyeshu. Savakta prakrita smrida. Such a person is a prakrita bhaktan. Prakrita means very, very impure place. Then you can see there are so many, in that Hari Maharshi gives you a very good description of bhakti. Very good. And the nature of devotees. You will see, grihitva indriyartan yonadveshtina krishyadi vishnor mayamidam pashyan savai bhagavadottama. Then he mentions all that. So, that's what we have to understand is here that aham sarve aham alma gudakesha. The depth of that verse. So here, even the first class devotee, nobody is going to be there in the first day or first few years or any time. It's going to take a long time to get there. But Krishna is saying here, if madhyama bhakti, first class bhakti, pure bhakti, if it's not possible, at least madhyama bhakti, give that to me. If not, at least the prakrita bhakti. So even if you chant the holy name, and even if that becomes as a proper upasana stage, then if love develops there, and if somewhere we can recognize Krishna's presence in any of them, and if we go deeper in that, in course of time, it can develop into first class bhakti. First class bhakti. So, at least somewhere, we have to experience Krishna's presence. That's the important thing. Somewhere, we have to experience Krishna's presence. And that is what is called vibhuti. That is what is called vibhuti. Vibhuti means, at least to recognize Krishna's presence somewhere. In other words, in this 20th verse, Ahamalpa Gudangisha, Krishna mentions there that this awareness inside recognizing Krishna somewhere means either in the deity or in one of the many vibhutis which Krishna is going to talk about from now on. In one of them somewhere, if you recognize Krishna's presence with proper sadhana and inquiry, he will eventually come to the platform of pure bhakti. Come to the platform of pure bhakti. But Krishna called this awareness inside, consciousness or awareness inside, Krishna called it as Mahavibhuti, isn't it? Mahavibhuti. So, instead of that, in the external objects anywhere, wherever there is some speciality, if one feels, or presence of Krishna is one recognizes, that is called vibhuti. That is called vibhuti. So that is when we saw a few verses before that the presence in outside, which are the adityanamaham Vishnu Jyotisham Raviram Shuman Marichar Marudamasmi Nakshatranamaham Shashi. We have seen that verse. We also saw Vedanam Samavedosmi, Devanam Asmi, Vasava, Indriyanam Manaschasmi, Bhutanam Asmi, Chetana. Then Rudranam Shankarashasmi, Vitesho Yaksharakshasam, വസൂനാം പാവകശ്ചാസ്മി മേരു ശിഖരിണാമഹം. ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ദ വേർഡ്സ് വി വർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് ലാസ്റ്റ് സാറ്റർഡേ. സോ ഹിയർ യു സി ഭൂതാന വേദാനാം ഇന്ദ്രിയാണാം മനഃശാസ്മി. കൃഷ്ണ സൈസ് ഇന്ദ്രിയാണാം മനഃശാസ്മി, ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ഇൻ ദി 22 വേർഡ്സ്. വേർഡ്സ് 22 കൃഷ്ണ സൈസ് ഇന്ദ്രിയാണാം മനഃശാസ്മി. കൃഷ്ണ സേയിങ് മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് മൈ വിഭൂതി. ദിസ് ഈസ് എ വെരി ഇമ്പോർട്ടൻറ്റ് തിങ് ഇഫ് യു അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ് ദിസ് ദാറ്റ് സം തിങ്സ് വി ഹാവ് ടു സീ വെരി സ്പെഷ്യൽ ഇൻ ദി ബോഡി. ദിസ് മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് വൺ തിങ് വിച്ച് ഓൺലി ഹ്യൂമൻ സ്പീസീസ് ഹസ് ഗോട്ട്. ദ മൈൻഡ് ഓൺലി ഹ്യൂമൻ സ്പീസീസ് മൈൻഡ് എക്സിസ്റ്റ്. മൈൻഡ് എക്സിസ്റ്റ് ദൻ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് എ പവർ ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് ഇൻസൈഡ് അസ് ഇൻ എവറി ഹ്യൂമൻ ബോഡി. If you ask the question, is there no mind in the animals? People ask that question, isn't it? Is there no mind in the animals? They say, oh, it appears as though they have also got a mind, isn't it? Actually, it is not mind. What is inside the animal is called prakriti. Prakriti is what they have got. And what you see in the human body is mind. What they have got is prakriti. For example, they also get angry, isn't it? Animals also get angry. They hate everything they show in there. So you start thinking they have got a mind like us. Actually, they don't have. What it is for example, if you give some food to your dog, the dog is eating the food. If another dog comes, he'll bark, get rid of the other one. It's my share, isn't it? So that is not mind. That is not mind. Only in the human body mind exists. That mind is a very intelligent power. That is what is inside us. That is why Krishna is saying, I am that mind. I am that mind, that power. And that mind has got two sides to it, Vidya Shakti and Avidya Shakti. Vidya Avidya Surubini is addressed a mind like that. Sri Parvati is a personification of mind is Vidya Avidya Surubini. So, Devi Swarupam, in other words. That Krishna has put that mind fitted inside us. And only if this mind helps, it is because of this mind that we are separate from the animals. Because of the presence of mind. And it's only using this mind, you can progress in the path of spiritual life, towards liberation. Towards liberation. So, all other species are separated from us due to the presence of this mind. Why it is like that is when we do the right thing and the wrong thing in this world is based on the mind. Is it not? We do sometimes right thing, we do sometimes wrong thing. And this power for doing the right and the wrong is coming from the mind. For the animals, they will never commit any mistake. You know? We make mistakes, they don't make mistakes. For them there is no right or wrong. Only what is their inherent nature, they will act, which is their prakriti, that is. According to that, they will act. They don't have what we call as the mind in them. They don't make a decision based on the mind. And because this power is there in the mind to do the right and the wrong, that is why we fall into bondage. We get into bondage. Bondage happens because of this. Because sometimes we do good things also. Mostly bad things, but we go sometimes do something good also. So this doing good things and bad things is due to the presence of the mind, and that is what is causing the bondage and liberation also. So animals don't do good and bad. They never do anything good or bad. What is destined, what is meant for their nature, they will act according to that. That's all they can do. They can find what is something good and something bad, and they can't make that decision. What is in their nature, they will act accordingly. But in our nature, in our prakriti, good and the bad, we may do sometimes, good or bad. And if you do either of them, you can be in bondage. Either of them can create bondage. We are thinking that if you do good things, you will get into bondage. Only difference is, one is a golden chain, other one is a iron chain. Other is a iron chain. and both of them will bind us. Both of them will bind us. So, in fact, you can break away from the iron chain, but golden chain, it's very difficult to break away from that, because after all, you'll think, after all, it's gold, let it stay. That's what will happen. That's what is the nature of this golden chain. So, so both good and the bad will bind us. So, where did do these two things come from, good and the bad? It comes from the mind. It comes from the mind. So, what does dharma mean? Dharma means that whether good or bad, I will not do either of them. In the sense that, what has to be done, I'll do that. That is dharma. I won't look into the good side and the bad side of it. That is not my response. What is to be done, I will do that. That is, that means, if I do right, good things, pious activity, pious credit will come. If I do bad things, sinful reactions will come. But if you don't look at that, and what you have to do if you do that, that is called dharma. That is called dharma. So, in other words, the problem is, as long as there is ego inside, you can only do good or bad things. Only when there is freedom from the ego, and then you are acting in this world, only at that time your actions are not bound by good or bad. So, for example, for example, as long as the ego is there, we will act either in a right, in the good way or in a bad way. And we will not be able to do what is meant to be done. Look at Arjuna's situation. Arjuna is keeping, he is staying there with the bow and the arrow, isn't it? He is saying to Krishna, it's not good to fight and kill all these people. Krishna says to him, no, you should do it. You should do it. As far as you are concerned, it is not good or bad. Krishna is explaining that to Arjuna, isn't it? As your vasana is like that, you come here to exhaust that vasana in you. And for you to think in this way, good or bad, is wrong. Is wrong on your part. So you should fight and do what you have to do, the war. The fighting is your process. If you don't do it, you will never get released. That's what Krishna says to Arjuna. If you don't do it, you will never get released because you are born for it. You are born for it. Because by the time when you were born, it is already ingrained in you, and you have to release it before you leave this world, before leaving this world. So, only when we become an instrument like that, you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. It is true that the same living force is present in everyone. That is no doubt. It is the same living force is present in everyone. Just like electricity is present in the fridge, electricity is present in the heater, electricity is present in the CD player, in the grinder, in fridge, everywhere. Electricity is present. Similarly, Krishna is present in everyone. But what is the difficulty? Difficulty is this, that depending on the upadhi, for example, a CD player only can play a CD. You can't put a CD in the fridge to play, it won't play. Similarly, you can't grind anything in the CD player. So, upadhi is different in everything, is it not? The power is the same, electricity is the same, but upadhi is different. Upadhi is different. Based on the upadhi only, it can act. Based on the upadhi only, it can act. So, similarly, although it is the same electricity everywhere, only according to this upadhi, it can function. And that is called upadhi's dharma. Upadhi dharmam it is called. Upadhi's dharmam it is. Krishna is present, no doubt, in Duryodhana as well as in Arjuna. Also in Bhishma, Drona and others and all other soldiers who are present. Krishna is present in everyone. But what is the difference? Their upadhi is different, isn't it? Upadhi of Duryodhana is different than the Arjuna's upadhi. So they are saying here that when you know what is expected of you to do, and knowing that, without having any motivation or corruption, if you execute that dharma, without any ego inside. In order to do that, you should not have any ego inside. That means, if Arjuna has to execute that dharmam as a kshatriya there in the battlefield, Krishna is saying to him that in order to execute that dharmam, what you are meant to do, without any motivation or corruption inside, in order to do that, you should not have any ego inside. Arjuna's problem was ego. You have to recognize that first. In the beginning, all that big talk Arjuna did in the first chapter is based on the ego, that I will not do it. He is my teacher, Drona is there, and all they are my worshipable personalities who are friend in front of me. Why should I kill all these people? Why should I make so many women, children helpless in this world by killing all these people? All this kind of logic, very powerful logic Arjuna has put forward. Krishna's answer to Arjuna was that, Arjuna, try to understand that you cannot escape from this in this way. This is not dharmam. You have misunderstood what dharmam is. Dharmam is saying to Arjuna that dharmam does not belong to the soul. Dharmam belongs to the upadhi. Upadhi dharmam, it is called. So in that upadhi, whatever, because you have got that upadhi already, you can't escape from that. Till that dharmam is executed through that upadhi, you are not free. You are not free. So the intelligent thing is to know that how to execute that dharmam of the upadhi without any motivation and corruption, so that the work gets done through that body. And that is what Krishna is saying here. In order to do that, there should be no ego inside the person. He should be free from ego. If the ego goes away, then you will not be a person, you will be simply a force. It's not a person anymore. You are simply a force. That is the most important thing. Once the ego goes away, then you are not a person anymore. You are just a force, isn't it? Ego, as long as ego is there, you are a person. Remember this? Jiva, the ego. Ego is what that jivatvam is. As long as that ego is there, you are a person. Once the ego has gone from inside, then you are just a force acting in this world. So if it is a person, what is the difference? If it is a person, very often it will be, your force will be interrupted. That force will be interrupted. That is why jnani, realized souls, they are not individuals anymore. They are not individuals anymore. And they are not persons anymore. On the other hand, they are the center of a force. Center of a force. Therefore, while dealing with them, one has to be very alert and very careful while dealing with such realized personalities. Because you can't deal with them like you deal with an ego in the world, a personality in this world. You can't deal with them like that, because that force that is acting through that realized person, there is nobody inside him to control that. In a realized person, why we have to be careful while dealing with them is, it's not like we deal with another personality. Because inside that person, there is no one who will control that force. It will act. It will simply act. Because it's a center that is present in there. And because in his side there is no mind in him. Mind has gone away. So if the mind leaves us, we will also become like that. So how will we get released from that mind? And in order to that happen, the mind has to get a realization. The mind has to get a realization. What is that realization? That I am soul, not the mind. So long as I am thinking in my mind that I am this mind, I will be separate from the soul. So when we realize this, that the mind is not separate. Mind is the soul, but my existence as mind is gone away, and I come to the idea and identification with the soul, that moment what happens? Mind means you are separated. You are separated. Moment you come to the platform of the soul, it becomes akhanda vastu. Akhanda means unbroken. uninterrupted it becomes. And then it is not anymore a mind. It will not stay as a mind anymore. Manase neha naptavyam neha nanasti kinchana, Shruti says. So, and that has to be achieved only through the mind. It has to be achieved only through the mind. So, while listening, people will think that it is a contradiction actually. But that's the only way. Only through the mind you can get there. Where is the contradiction coming? Contradiction is coming from the mind. Contradiction is coming from the mind. If you're feeling any contradiction on these statements, you can take it that that contradiction is coming from the mind. Mind is a very powerful force and is a very subtle force as well. So, when we realize that this mind is not a separate vastu, separately existing. Mind is not something separately existing. And it is one with me, the self, then the mind will naturally take a position of akhandam. Akhandam means you cannot... You remember I mentioned this before also, that mind, when we say mind, also we refer to the false ego. False ego makes us feel we are separate from others, is it not? Our separated existence and separated identity is due to the false ego inside. When the false ego leaves us, then you will not experience that separated existence anymore. Similarly, mind also, when you realize that there is only one vastu inside, at that moment immediately you feel your presence everywhere. Like you can see in the case of all the great souls in the Bhagavadam, in the first introduction itself, they put Shukada Brahmarshi to us in that way, isn't it? Tam sarvabhuta hridayam munimana tosmi. That sarvabhuta hridayam. All the, in the ninth canto, if you read, there are so many kings listed there. If you study them, the purpose of Sridhara Swami mentions this, that why all importance to all these kings so much? A number of them. Father, son, father, son, father, son. Some of them were very intelligent kings in the sense that, not all, some of them, they utilized and they threw away everything at the end of their life and went to the forest and realized the self and went back to the spiritual world. So there, Sridhara Swami says there, to show to us, even they had to leave this world. What to talk about ordinary people, he says. Even the great, great powerful kings and personalities like them, they had to go. So there you will see two or three kings mentioned. One Prishagna is mentioned there. You will see how he realized that self-realization is important, went to the forest and realized himself. There's another one, Asamanjasa. His name is mentioned. There's few names like that who, apart from the well-known personalities like Shukada Brahmarshi, Jadabharata, Dattatreya Maharshi, Rishabhadev, they are all prominent personalities because they have been spoken in detail in the Bhagavadam. But if you go into ninth canto and look there, you will see a list of other people mentioned there who have also gone in the same path and escaped from here. So here you can see here that mind will be gone at that moment. There is no mind anymore for that person. This is why I'm saying how important it is to understand this mind. Mind doesn't exist in the animals. It's only in the human species. And in human species, this mind is a force which creates this good and bad in us. Sangalpa vigalpam, it is called. Sangalpam and vigalpam. That's what mind does. And as long as sangalpa vigalpam is there, good and bad is there, you will think this is good, this is bad. But in order that the mind has to freeze, if you want to freeze the mind, we have to move on to the other state, what Krishna is saying to Arjuna, that you have to understand that what is your dharmam first, and that dharmam should get through to the body without the ego taking responsibility to it. It should work through that. In that way, the mind will cease to exist, and that means you will come to the platform of the soul. Platform of the soul. So very karma yoga is all centered around this, isn't it? So you can see how difficult it is, this process, what Krishna is saying here, that in karma margam also, whether it is karma margam, ജ്ഞാനമാർഗം ഭക്തിമാർഗം വേറെവർ ദറ്റ് ഈസ് ദീസ് അണ്ടർലൈങ് പ്രിൻസിപ്പിൾസ് ഡോണ്ട് ചേഞ്ച് ബിക്കോസ് കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് അഡ്രസ്ഡ് ആസ് വാട്ട് ഇൻ ദി 11th ചാപ്റ്റർ അർജുന സേസ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ യു ആർ ശാശ്വത ധർമ്മഗോപ്ത ദർ ഈസ് എ വേർഡ് അർജുന ഹാസ് യൂസ്ഡ് ടു അഡ്രസ്സിംഗ് കൃഷ്ണ ശാശ്വത ധർമ്മഗോപ്ത ശാശ്വത ധർമ്മഗോപ്ത മീൻസ് വൺ ഹൂ പ്രൊട്ടക്ട്സ് ദ ധർമ്മം ഇറ്റേണലി ആൻഡ് ദീസ് ധർമ്മം വിൽ നോട്ട് ചേഞ്ച് ഇറ്റ് വിൽ ഓൾവേസ് റിമെയിൻസ് ദി സെയിം സോ ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് കേസ് മൈൻഡ് സെയിം മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് ഗോൺ ഫോർ എക്സാമ്പിൾ ഫോർ എ പേഴ്സൺ മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് ഗോൺ ദെൻ ദ ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ വിൽ കം ഹാസ് എ റിയലൈസ്ഡ് സോൾ ഡസ് ഹി ഡ്രീം ദിസ് ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ വിൽ കം ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ് ബിക്കോസ് മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് വാട്ട് ഡ്രീംസ് We don't need any proof because we get a good dream from beginning to end in the morning. So there is no problem there. So dream is concerned. Dream exists for those who have got a mind. Those who doesn't have a mind, they have got only Jagrat state and Sushupti. Swapnam is taken away from them. So then the answer to that is, he does have a Swapnam. How? If he has got a vacant state, he must have a Swapnam as well. Isn't it? He has got a vacant state, so he should have a Swapnam as well. Jagrat is there, he has to have a Swapnam as well. Because here what's happening here is that in the vacant state, he knows, in the Jagrat state, he knows that everything is happening through him. Everything through happening to him. And he knows very well, it's a very in the highly advanced state, in the Jagrat state, he knows that everything is him. Everything is him. In other words, Vivaharam starts only when you have separation, isn't it? In the society. Why there is so much transactions? Because there is so many egos also operating here. In the society, isn't it? So when the egos goes away, there is, even in the Jagrat state also, he knows very well he is not interacting with the ego. There's only one force that is present in everyone. Like Shuga Brahmarshi state. Tvam sarvabhuta hridayam muni manatosmi. Sarvabhuta hridayam. In all living entities' heart, it's only him present. So, similarly, in his dreams also, he will have the same smriti, same memory in his dreams. At that time, his mind is functioning like that. The mind is not working anymore. What has happened is, in the vacant state, the mind has changed its nature. That means that he is seeing his presence in everyone, in the vacant state. So, in his dreams also, the same situation happens to him. Dream will be there, but the same thing happens to him. I don't know whether I have clearly spoken about that. See, this mind is a very interesting topic to study. The way the mind operates within us, isn't it? So, mind, when it is separate from the soul, that's our situation now, and we are either in the bodily plane or in the mental platform, isn't it? Most of the time in the bodily platform, a few minutes in a day or so, we are in a mental platform. We don't go further than that. Mostly in these two platforms, these two levels we are operating. When there is mind, we will make decisions all the time. Good, bad, right, wrong. This decision goes on, isn't it? Sankalpam, vikalpam. And where is this coming from? It comes from the mind. Sankalpa, vikalpam. It's coming from the mind, this good and bad. And we have got so used to it that we think this is the proper way. Or I made a good decision, I'll say. Or I made a bad decision. We always mention like that, isn't it? Animals don't have that problem because they don't have this mind in them. What they have got is their nature. They will act according to their nature, whatever it is. Instinct, as they call it, isn't it? Instinct. According to the instinct, they will act. But because they have got this mind creates good or bad, whatever it is. It tells us something good and something bad. Because of that, we get into bondage. Because some things we think we have done the right thing, some things we say we have done the wrong thing. And because good and bad exist, right and wrong exist, pious activities and sinful activities exist, therefore we get into bondage. Bondage comes from the mind. That is why all the work is centered. Atma has nothing to do with any of these things. It's all in the mind, all these things are going on. So Krishna mentions to Arjuna that this looking at good and bad and you start working in this world, you won't get anywhere. You won't be able to find a solution. And that is what the problem with most of the people in the world, isn't it? We make a decision, he's doing the wrong thing, he's doing the right thing. And on that basis, we interpret their activities, good and bad. And then we make the decision whether we should punish him or we should applaud him for what he has done. This way life is going on in this world. Krishna says, that's all wrong because all of us have been sent here to do something according to our vasana. That's what we are here for. To get rid of that vasana inside, we have been sent here. So Arjuna, Krishna says to Arjuna, Arjuna, if you start thinking and telling me your logic based on the mind, I'm not accepting that. Krishna says to Arjuna, if you are giving me your logic based on your mind, I'm not accepting that, he says. What you have to do, he says to Arjuna, knowing what is your dharmam, and execute that dharmam in such a way, without any motivation, and without any corruption, you should execute that. In that way, if you do it, you will get yourself freed from this. You will escape, don't worry about the world. This is Krishna's important point. You will escape, but don't worry about the world. Whereas Arjuna was talking about the world. Is it not? Big mistake. We all make the same mistake. We always talk about, oh, if I do this, what will happen to the world? As though the world is depending on our actions. Everybody does this. So we should understand that principle behind it. Krishna is saying to Arjuna that if you act in the proper way, you can escape from here. And that means without ego, you should operate. What is your dharmam you should execute. And that dharmam should be executed without any motivation, without any corruption. That means what? Handing over everything to Krishna, basically. Isn't it? That is surrender and that is bhakti. That is bhakti. Not all the other show what we do in this life. That is rituals associated with that to bring some discipline to life. But the principle is more important. Krishna is saying to him that, so, in the Jnani's case, Jnani also is freed from the impact of the mind. He's already finished with the mind. But that does not mean that that force is not acting anymore. Force is still there, but the difference is it's not acting like the way it acted before. Because he has got a Jagrat state, it is to be taken that he has to have a dream state as well. But the problem is that in his Jagrat state, he realizes, because he has brought his Sushupti experience into the Jagrat already, isn't it? That Sushupti experience, he has got it in Jagrat. What is the Sushupti experience? Sushupti experience is this, that I am not this body, I am not the mind, I am not the intelligence, I am not the ego. Freedom from all that Upadhi, which he has got in Sushupti, he has brought into Jagrat state. So in Jagrat state he is there, but he knows very well that he is none of the Upadhis. Freedom from the Upadhi he has got. So he knows very well in the vacant state that he is that pure consciousness which is present in everyone. In a similar way, even in the dream state also, he has a dream state, he will still know that who is experiencing that dream is the same person who is present in everyone. That realization. That is the difference. I know it is easy to talk all these things. Unless it comes to experience, all this has no meaning. Isn't it? Only to make us see the logic in all these things, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam will give us an understanding what happens in these three states. And when the mind, now another thing, when the mind is operating in the realm of knowledge of the self, it's not called mind anymore. Although it is the same force, but because it is operating in the plane of the knowledge, self-knowledge, it is not mind anymore. Actually, it is called the grace, Kripa Shakti, Krishna's Kripa, that is working there. It is not the mind anymore. And that Kripa Shakti, which is also called as Chit Shakti, that is keeping that mind not to go in the other way, in the opposite way. And keeping all this in this meditation state. What is that meditation state? Meditation state is this, that untouched by the Upadhi. Untouched by the Upadhi. Upadhi means body, mind. Mind means sankalpa vikalpam, intelligence, ego. Those things would have no effect on that person. So, controlling the mind through thought power, and keeping it in control is just like a plane. Before it takes off, it runs on the runway for a while, isn't it? It's like that. We practice through self-inquiry and all. We try to control the mind, isn't it? Not allow the mind to go into the world too much and to go after sense objects. That is very much similar to the aeroplane when it running on the runway, because it knows it's going to take off one day, few hours. Similarly, this practicing it like this is like the runway, running on the runway before the takeoff. When through proper realization of the tattvam, tattvajnanam happens to him, and when he comes to know there is no such thing called mind, and for him mind does not exist, even if there's whatever force you call it, it does not exist separately from the soul. He realizes that what exists only is the soul, nothing else. And it is that same soul which has come as in the form of mind, in the form of this body, senses, intelligence, and the world, and so many other things in this creation, whether it is solid or liquid, and chemicals or gas or plasma, whatever it is, everything what you see in this world, you will start realizing that it is that same one truth inside, which is a very higher understanding, isn't it? So at that point, your dvaidam has gone from inside. Dvaidam disappears at that time. Dvaidam is this, seeing everything separate, isn't it? So in that state, mind will go away from him. Mind will go away from him. So this Ahamalma Gudakesham, this verse is also giving us an indication that the mind's presence inside is a big purification is necessary there. So the forces, the mind which is acting inside, it is a very powerful force. So just to understand that, the mind is only a special force that operates within the human species. Until it gets that perfection, identification with the soul, the mind will continue to operate inside us. And all the process of chanting the holy name, deity worship, all these things can help to subdue this mind and to get that purity inside. So, when the mind disappears, you can see what happens. All the senses are driven by the mind, isn't it? All the senses are driven by the mind, which you know that the senses are driven by the mind. I think Prabhupada mentions that also, that Kathopanishad verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which mentions that, isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita, you will see Prabhupada has quoted that verse, Almanam Radhinam Vidhi. Famous verse it is from the Kathopanishad. Almanam Radhinam Vidhi Shariram Rathamevava Buddhistu Saradam Vidhi Mana Pragrahamevava Indriyana Hayanahu Vishayam Steshu Gocharan Almendriya Manoyuktam Bhokte Tyahur Manishina. This is in one of the purports, he says. I think it is the second chapter or so, where he mentions that. I think it is in the second chapter, or somewhere. In one of the purports it's there. Comparing, or in, it is in the sixth chapter, I don't know. Where he compares that the comparing this body as a chariot. Rathakalpana. Comparing this as a chariot. Body is a chariot. 634. 634. Yeah. Okay. 634. Yeah. Almanam Radhinam Vidhi Shariram Rathamevacha. Buddhistu Saradim Vidhi Mana Pragrahamevava. Indriyani Hayanyahu Vishayan Teshu Kocharan. Almendriya Manoyuktam Bhokti Tyahuru Manishina. The individual is the passage in the car of the material body, and intelligence is the driver. Mind is the driving instrument, and the senses are the horses. Self is thus the enjoyer or sufferer in the association of the mind and senses. So it is understood by great thinkers. Intelligence is supposed to direct the mind, but the mind is so strong and obstinate that it often overcomes even one's own intelligence. Such a strong mind is supposed to be controlled by the practice of yoga. But such practice is never practiced for a worldly person like Arjuna. So here Arjuna is a worldly person. Anyway, so you can see that verse is saying, Almanam Radhinam Vidhi, it is a Kathopanishad verse. Almanam Radhinam Vidhi, Shariram Rathamevava, Buddhistu Saradhim Vidhi, Manapargrahamevacha. Indriyan Hayanahur Vishayam Teshu Gocharan, Almendriya Manayuktam Bhoktetyahur Manishana. So, this escaping from the mind, we have to know all these things are happening in the subtle body. It has nothing to do with the soul. This is more important, isn't it? So, mind is the one, in their words, you can see the rain, isn't it? Rain is a word, isn't it? Rain, which controls the senses, controls the sentences. And controlling the mind is the intelligence. So, this, here, practically there is not much difference between mind and intelligence. Mind and intelligence. Actually, mind is intelligence. Intelligence is the mind. Why it's spoken like that is to show to us that as an entity, buddhi is spoken separately. Because in that Rathakalpana, Krishna is in the place of intelligence. Krishna is in the place of intelligence. And Krishna is holding the rein and the horses are running, isn't it? So, Krishna is not there. In our case, we have taken Krishna away. Instead, we have put the mind there. Mind is doing both jobs of the intelligence and the senses. So, actually, in intelligence, a movement has happened, and that is what has come out in the form of mind. And it has expanded like that. So, why is it like that? Because in buddhi, in your intelligence, if there is no clarity, clarity means that if you are not sure in your head what you are doing in your intelligence, then you are controlled by the mind. We are in that situation at the moment, is it not? We don't know. What mind tells us, we go and do it at the end. But if you, someone who has realized this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, his intelligence will be completely what is Bhagavad Gita is saying. In which case, he won't act based on his mind. He will act based on his intelligence. That is the point. See, when intelligence goes away, we act in the world based on the mind. And mind is nothing but a movement in the intelligence, which has come in the form of the mind. So, in your intelligence, if he is no tattva-jnanam, tattva-jnanam means this knowledge of the self, what happens is, in the Shastram they call it as abhabhramsham. Abhabhramsham means a kind of fall down. You've fallen. You lost it. We say in English, you lost it, isn't it? The old man has lost it, they say. We say about old people, oh, he has lost it. Can't get it anymore. So, like things we forget, so many things we forget. And then you start thinking, how did I forget that? Think about it. Due to age, something like that. So, that is bhramsham. Bhramsham means simple things we can't remember anymore. So this is called abhabhramsham. Abhabhramsham means, so, normally, mind is like a free agent. Mind generates sankalpam vikalpam, isn't it? Different thoughts it creates. So, when that mind, it has got a base. What is that base? Ahangaram. Ahangaram is the base. And based on that ahangaram, which is our ego, false ego, jiva abhimanam, what recognizes my existence as the ego? Intelligence does that. The subtle body studying that, if you look at the way Shastram explains that, Upanishads are explaining that they are one, but based on the function, they act in different ways. Same force acts in three, four different ways. Buddhi, manasa, ahankaram, chittam. Four things in the subtle body. So, when the in my intelligence, for example, the same force, if I have recognized ahankaram, false ego, that means I have recognized my existence as a separate entity. That is my what we call as ego. I am, I am, I am. Isn't it? Running around all over the world, doing all sorts of things. That ego inside, that is something in me which is already recognized by the intelligence, its existence. And when it does that, that is when mind starts. When the intelligence recognizes my existence as false ego, then at that moment the mind starts inside operating. So you can see the connection between mind, intelligence and false ego. Is it not? When the intelligence recognizes my existence as a separate entity, I am, I am, I am, that false ego inside, false ego, I am recognized by me. Like there's a song, isn't it? Somebody said, you are nobody. He says, I am nobody, but I am somebody, he said. Something like that, there is a song. So, that I am somebody, that won't go easily. I may be nobody, but I am somebody. So, till that somebody goes away from me inside, this buddhi has established this in me, that I am somebody. So, when buddhi is thinking like that, that means buddhi has recognized my ego. In other words, so once ego is recognized, that very moment the mind starts its operation, function. It starts. So, buddhi, ego and the mind. All three are like this. They are connected to each other. And it is a very amazing force. When the intelligence is corrected, everything will be corrected. When the intelligence is corrected, everything is corrected. Because that is where this whole thing, process has started. Amazing thing, because even in the medical science, it's a very interesting thing. They also started thinking like this, even in the medical field. Because, for example, in your body, say you've got the hands, legs, everything, complete part of the body, it's there, isn't it? And this is recognized in intelligence. I got a full body now. I got this full body. Suppose some accident happened, I lost my hand, cut it off, amputated or something, and I went to sleep, but intelligence has not accepted it yet. I have taken a part of my hand, but in intelligence is not accepted yet. So what will happen is, in the night, say for example, the telephone rang, I will immediately put my hand, which is already gone. I am not conscious of that. Why? It has not changed inside. It takes a long time programming there, in that source, to program it. It takes longer time. So It will be a while. It has happened to many people. They got up in the night thinking that legs were gone. They were soldiers, fought the war somewhere, and they had legs were cut off, and they brought back. But in the night, in the deep sleep, they have forgotten that. They are still identifying with the self. As the whole body is in their intelligence, the whole body exists. So when the phone rang, they got up and started walking, and they fell. And only then they realized that, oh, I had lost my leg. That happens. It happens often. So, buddhi does not know that, he doesn't have the hand. So, that, or sometimes, he will experience a scratching experience. He felt like scratching in a place which he doesn't have. The hand is gone, but he feels that it is itching. This kind of experience, this comes from that. So, even the science is studying this now, this phenomenon. Because rishis are telling us that it is from buddhi all these things have come. Abhimanam, intelligence was, ego was born from intelligence. Intelligence has recognized it, therefore it's there. In deep embedded in me, that my existence awareness, that I am ego, that is embedded in me by the presence of my, due to my impure intelligence. Because my impure intelligence. And the moment I have recognized that presence of me, my ego, every moment the mind also starts its function. So till intelligence is corrected, intelligence is purified, this will not happen. So in intelligence that knowledge is still there, and in intelligence you are experiencing the body is existing. In intelligence you are experiencing something what is not existing. In intelligence you are experiencing like that. So that ignorance in the intelligence, that ignorance in the intelligence influences everything in your function, in your functioning. Everything it influences. This is why in Vedantam what they say is, in your intelligence, if this knowledge of the soul has properly established and shines very well, illuminates very well in the intelligence, and the body, mind is not truth, that if that knowledge is established in the intelligence firmly, then as far as that person is concerned, he will reach in a very amazing situation. He will reach a very amazing situation. Because that is a state where you can say you have moved away from the body. If you remember, in the Bhagavatam, Krishna said this. Of course, Krishna said this. Where did he say? Dehastobi na dehasta. That's what it is. Dehastobi na dehasta. Vidwan swapnad yathothida. Krishna just spoke and went away like that. Didn't say more than that, but he told Uddhava, Uddhava dehastobi na dehasta, that situation. Inside the body, but not, I think it is in the 10th or 11th. 10th, I think. Vidwan swapnad yathothida. Adehasto vina dehasta kumadi swapnadrik yatha. That is that verse. Very, very nice verse. How Krishna is clarifying that point. Dehasto vina dehasta vidwan swapnad yathothida. Adehasto vina dehasta kumadi swapnadrik yatha. 11? 8, is it? 8 chapter. Not 8, is it? No. It's
11, 8.
11, 8,
yeah.
Okay. 11, 8,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Dehasto bina dehasto vidwan swapnad yathothida. Adehasto bina dehasta kumati swapnadrik yatha. See that word? Dehasto bhi na dehasta vidwan swapnad yathothida. Adehasto bhi dehasta kumati swapnadrik yatha. So that's what that is. So how do you become dehasto bina dehasta? That's what we were discussing. Dehasto bhi na dehasta. You are in the body, but you are not in the body. Isn't it? You are in the body still. You have not left the body, but you are not in the body. That means, in your intelligence, if you have freed yourself, this ajnanam, avidya inside, if that's taken out from the intelligence, then you are not in the body anymore. Who implanted this into our intelligence? That is called avidya. That's ajnanam. How this has happened? No, nobody knows. It has happened. Because it is planted there inside in my intelligence, I am this body. And how did I because first before the body, I recognize my ego. I am. That ego recognized. And ego is recognized based on that the mind was born. When the mind is born, the body was born from that. Further expanded. And from that, the world has come. And from that senses, sense objects, enjoyment, suffering, everything has come after that. Krishna is saying, at the time of, while leaving this body, if you have not reached that state, dehasto bina dehasta, there is not much hope. And it has to happen before leaving this world, not afterwards. No? Afterwards. So, that state, That means you have the body, but you don't have the body. That state. So, the interesting thing is, other people won't know that if that has happened inside you. If it has happened inside you, other people won't know that, but he will escape. Other people may or may not know what can be done about that. So, at that stage, his own mind itself become a force of the soul. It's nothing but soul is operating there. So, this same force, what is, there is other ways of approaching this. It is not the only way. That also you should understand. That there is a process called Sri Vidya Sampradayam. That means, there, that force is called Brahmi. The same force is called Brahmi. That is, in the, you know, Sri Parvati is worshipped in the Sattvika form, in the goodness form. When she is worshipped, that is called the Sri Vidya process. That Sri Vidya process, when she is worshipped, she is called Brahmi. And she is addressed as Vidya Sarubini, Brahma Vidya Sarubini. She is the Brahma Vidya. So, the moment the mind is become pure, that very mind which is inside will show the direction, which way to go. And if the mind takes the wrong route, if it has lost the proper track, it becomes a demon. So, that is why you will see, only in the Vedic literature, demon and devotee are same person. They are not different. Everywhere else we have a classification separately, isn't it? In Vedam, demon and devotee are the same person. What has happened is, in his mind, this, he went in the wrong direction. Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, they are as good as Srinarada Maharshi or Vasishtha, in that way, because they are both Krishna's different manifestation. But where is the difference? Difference is, one has his mind in the right direction, other person's mind has gone in the wrong directions. So, in order to explain this, how Bhagavatam puts it to us is, father is the same, the mother is different. You see there? Kashyapa Prajapati, the father, is the same for both. People ask the question, oh, how could two sons have come from the same father? One is very good, one is extremely bad, gunda. So how he has become like this? People ask the question, isn't it? And we start thinking, that if it is the same father, both should behave in the same way as good people, good boys. But they are not happening. One is going in the right track, one is going in the totally opposite way. Why is it like that? In order to make it clear to us, in the Bhagavatam, this Kashyapa Prajapati, Aditi Devi and Didi Devi. All the children comes through Didi Devi, they are all Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, that category. All the ones who comes through Aditi Devi, they are supposed to be devotees, isn't it? So same father, Kashyapa Prajapati, but Asuras, they have the certain emotions, negative emotions in them, isn't it? Just like you can see, there's another story in the Puranam. Puranam is full of stories like this. You will, just to get the point across to us, they make it through these stories and tell us this thing. So, Madhu and Kaitava, two demons. You may have read about the Madhu Kaitava. They are two asuras. They both come from Mahavishnu's ears. They were born from Mahavishnu's ears. So, and that too not from the ear, from the wax in the ear. They were born. So, they are born from the wax in the Mahavishnu's ears. Where does Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were born? They came from Vaikuntham. Isn't it? They came from Vaikuntham. In fact, really if you think about anything, there is no such thing called as evil. Evil doesn't exist. And there is no such thing as a bad person. There is no such... This, in our imagination, all these things, he is a bad person, he is a good person, because even the demon does not have an existence separated from Krishna. Separated from Krishna. So, from which plane you are looking at, that is how you see is, that in our level when you look at it, we are seeing him as a demon. In our level, when you look at it, we are seeing him as a demon. Because you are sitting as a devotee and you are looking at him, therefore you are seeing him as a demon. Suppose you have become a demon, then you won't think he is a demon, would you? So, from which level, which plane you are looking at that person, That determines whether he is a devotee or a demon. That's all it is. That's all it is. So, just like when we have a thinking that we are all devotees, everyone else is demons, isn't it? Why is that in our head so strongly? Everybody else, we start looking at them, they're all demons anyway, we say. And we call our parents also demons, all our children also demons, everybody is a demon. Only we are the devotees. So why this has happened? Because you have developed understanding that they are all demoniac, they are demoniac nature in them. So, but if you become like that, then you won't feel any difference between them, would you? So when the mind becomes in a negative mood like that, it will become an asura shakti, asurik shakti, demoniac nature will come from there. And it is that demoniac nature that manifests in the form of lust, anger, greed, desire, illusions, and competition, attachment, aversion, all these things that mind creates from in that person. So that binds him. That binds him. So just like the wind brings the clouds and covers the sky. And the same wind moves the clouds away and shows the sun to us. Shows the sun to us. So here you can see that mind makes this thing called bondage in us. Bandhanam. Bondage. Who creates? Mind creates. Isn't it? And the same mind, through purification, shravanam, kirtanam, all the processes, different processes, it liberates us. Same mind, it's the same mind that is making you a demon and a devotee. Is it not? So when the mind is in negative emotions, it creates all this. Bad thoughts, like lust, anger, greed, and attachment, aversion, and malsariam, competition, and all these kind of things comes from the mind. But if you practice spiritual activities, it purifies the mind, and the same mind makes a cause for liberation, takes you to liberation also. So, when the mind is situated in the path of self-realization, that is, Krishna is saying, it is my vibhuti. That's what he's saying in that verse. Say that. Indriyana manaschasmi bhudana masmi chetana. So, indriyana manaschasmi. Now you see why Krishna has given importance to the mind? It is for this reason. It is this mind, if it is properly situated, it can lead you to liberation. It can lead you to liberation. And at that time, it is my vibhuti, Krishna says. It's my, Krishna's manifestation. Vibhuti means manifestation. If it is helping you to realize the self, and if you are in that progress path progressing, that is Krishna's vibhuti. That's what Krishna is saying here. So, what will happen is, at that time in the mind, proper discrimination, renunciation, detachment, control of the mind, control of the senses. There is a list of them. Shamam, Dhamam, Titiksha, Uparadi, Shraddha, Samadhanam. All the qualities, what is necessary for self-realization will develop inside us. What is necessary for that? So, all these qualities, if they get cultivated inside, and with the result will be, you will become more tapasya means austerities will develop in a person. And if that mind, which is another manifestation of the Sri Parvati, another Vidya Vidya Surubini, if she gives us that mercy, and if we are very alert, then in that case, that intelligence is like a bag, what we have got with us. In that bag, and the mind is also an effect of your purva karma. The mind, what everyone has, is an effect of his previous karma in previous lifetimes. That's what your mind is. Now, when you talk about mind, it is vasana. See, it is vasana now. That mind is a very difficult difficult thing to define clearly. If somebody asks what is mind, very difficult to answer that question. Where is it? Nobody knows. Isn't it? We can say generally it is chittavritti. But at the same time, it is very closely linked to the intelligence, very closely linked to the false ego, closely linked to the vasanas inside. All of them had its contribution towards the mind, how the way the mind operates. So when the mind comes to the proper way, that the purva karmam effect of our previous karmam is all there in this process. So how to free ourselves from all this, we have to know it. In other words, at least if you can't escape from what you got, at least you have to know how to not to add any more into it, into that vasanas, and also how to handle it properly, that we have to learn. This is the whole science of Bhagavad Gita. Whole science of Bhagavad Gita is to educate people in this principle. Of course, people are using Bhagavad Gita for all other purposes. But this very subtle principle, how to bring it into one's practical life in this world and to apply it properly, this principle what Krishna has spoken here, how to free oneself from the influence of the mind. So, if you handle that mind with your ego and willpower and all that, it will go in the wrong way. So that is why Krishna says here that if you use your ego and if you use your willpower and if you handle your mind in that way, it will make you a demon. Because we are thinking we are intelligent. That's the problem. We are thinking we are very intelligent. And that will make us a demon. Krishna is saying here that that I am the controller of all the senses. In other words, if you look at the verse, you will see here, Indriyanam manaschasmi bhutanam asmi chetana. Bhutanam asmi chetana. They are connected each other. Indriyanam manaschasmi, bhudanam asmi chetana. Krishna says here that even for that mind, the chaitanyam, the force behind it is me, Krishna says. Aham, that awareness inside, is awareness inside. For example, the objects in the world outside, senses see that, isn't it? Senses see the objects in the world. And mind sees the senses. Through the senses, mind experiences that. Mind is like a witness for what the senses have gone into contact with. So, even in the dream state, that sakshi, witness, is still there. Is it not? You start wondering that in the daytime, for example, I am seeing Prabhupada's photo there now. I am seeing it in my eyes and in my mind I am experiencing that photo. Image. Experience means that pratiti, perception I have. Even when I am sleeping, the photo is not there, but it is inside me. Is it not? That form, that picture as it is inside me. That pratiti inside. So Krishna is saying here, that is my vibhuti. Able to see something during the day and able to keep it inside, that is my vibhuti, Krishna says. That is that second line. See that? Bhudanam asmi chetana. Chetana is doing that. Bhudanam asmi chetana. Indriyanam manaschasmi. Bhudanam asmi chetana. If chetana is not there, that won't happen. So chetana's power. Chetana's power. So, so when we study Bhagavad Gita properly, you will see that everything that is happening inside us, in our dream state, deep sleep, it is all Krishna's vibhuti. And if you, once you have known that very well, then the mind won't give you any problem. Even that, what problem is that we understand everything on an intellectual level, but it's not sinking in. That's where all the problem comes from, isn't it? So if you know this, then you don't have to go to any psychiatrist. You may not have to go to any psychiatrist. People go to psychiatrists thinking that they have got the solution. They've got bigger problems inside them. Inside there, they think all they can do is to give you some tablets to knock you out and send you away. So many things they'll tell you. I won't go into that because that's not my understanding, but I don't know much about it. But the fact is that what Krishna is saying to us, if you understand these two lines, which Indriyanam Manaschasmi, Bhutanam Asmi Chedana. If you know how this works, then there is no necessity to go to anybody for treatment. So, once you have known that the mind is Krishna's manifestation, that's what Krishna is saying to us. Bhutanam Indriyanam Manaschasmi. Krishna says, I am that. Bhutanam Asmi Chedana. Chedana is me. So, once you have known that, Krishna says, mind will never act against you then. If you have known this, if you have experienced or realized it, it will not go opposite to you. But so long as you are thinking, mind is a separate entity and you will never be able to win that war against the mind. This is important. We are thinking that mind, I'll control my mind. Funny thing about this mind is, you know, there are so many yoga processes to control the mind. And you try to control the mind. As long as you are keeping that control, it will stay. The moment you remove that, the mind will go its own way. You will not get any control over it. It's a very difficult thing, this mind, isn't it? When you study about it more and more, if you look inwards and start looking at your own self, forget about the world, look at yourself and look at your own mind and see how it is keeping you busy in so many things. It creates all kinds of anxiety, fear, illusion, attachment, aversion. Never allows you to free yourself from any of them. Is it not? So tightly, you can escape from anything else. You can escape from an enemy, run away from somewhere. But this thing, because he's inside, you can't do anything about him. He just keeps you occupied whole life. And then you're gone. So that is why it's so important, these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is saying to us, very important to know what is the function of the mind, what's the function of the intelligence, what's the function of the ego, how they operate together, what the vasanas do, how it affects our karma, what it creates in us, the impact of that, all these things, we have to keep it in our knowledge, should be there. And then we should function in that way. That is what Krishna is saying here. But instead, if you start thinking mind is a separate force acting totally independently, I can control, that is the science doing. The psychology and all that is making us a feeling that mind is a separate force. But the problem, Krishna is saying, you are studying the mind also with your mind. So where are you going to end up with? Often, this whole science of psychology and psychiatry, everything. And then, okay, if you want to get a counselor's job and you want to treat others, then it's okay. A lot of people have taken up to that profession of treating others, counseling others. And if you look into their own life, they have more problems than the person who go into them. Their life is completely messed up and they're trying to solve others' problems. So what to do? Anyway, after saying that, Krishna is saying in the next verse, Rudranam Shankaras Chasmi. That's the next verse, isn't it? Oh, that's the next verse. So, verse 23. Rudranam Shankaras Chasmi. Vitesho Yaksha Rakshasam. Vasunam Pavakas Chasmi. Meru Shikari Namaham. Rudranam Shankaras Chasmi. Vitesho Yaksha Rakshasam. Vasunam Pavagas Chasmi. Meru Shikari Namaham. Rudranam Egad Pavagas Shankaras Chasmi. Vitesho Yaksharakshasam. Vasunam Pavagas Chasmi. And Meru Shikari Namaham. So here, of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Kubera. Of the Vasus I am fire, Agni, and of the mountains I am Meru. Mountains I am Meru. So, like the last verse, Rudranam Egadashanam Shankaraja Asmi, Vitesha Kubero Yaksha Rakshasam, Yakshanam Rakshasamcha, Vasunam Ashtanam Pavakacha Asmi, Agni, Meru Shikharinam Shikharavadam Aham. Here, something important things here. Shiva's most auspicious form is Shankara. Shankara is called Sham Karodi Iti Shankara. So, generally, all the great Shiva's devotees, they have glorified Shankara as Shankara. Shiva has different forms, many forms. Among them, Shankara is the most auspicious one. Now, the auspicious means in the mode of goodness, in the sattvika form of Shiva is Shankara. So, who is Shankara is Dakshinamurti, another form. So, Shankara is also given in another aspect, that one who gives transcendental knowledge. One who gives transcendental knowledge. In that sense, also it means Shankara. Krishna is saying, Rudranam Shankara Shasmi. Because Shiva is the embodiment of knowledge. Embodiment of knowledge of the self. Knowledge of the self. You will see Sri Narada Maharshi, four Kumaras all taking instructions from Shiva on transcendental knowledge. Then, therefore, Rudranam Shankaras Chasmi. Krishna says, among the Rudras, I am Shankara. Says. Then, Viteshu Yaksha Rakshasam. This is the interesting one. Viteshu Yaksha Rakshasam. So, another group, Yakshas and Rakshas. Two different groups. So, the king of both, Viteshas and Yakshas, is Kubera. Is Kubera, isn't it? So, Kubera is the king of these Yakshas and Rakshasas. Kubera's brother is Ravana. Isn't it? Kubera's brother is Ravana. And therefore, you may have heard this word Yakshavittam. I don't know whether you have understood that word. I'm sure you're not. Because it's a very rare word used. Very rarely you'll find this word used. But it has got a very interesting meaning, this word Yakshavittam. If you look into Bhikshu Gita, in the Bhagavatam, this word comes there, Yakshavittam. I don't know how it is translated in our books. But if you look into the Bhikshu Gita, Krishna used that word Yakshavittam there. And that's very nice, because that Yakshavittam very precisely fits that person whom Krishna is talking about. In the, I think it's the 23rd, isn't it? Yeah, 23rd. Have you seen the word Yakshavittam there? Yeah. If you look at the 9th verse, 23:9. Tasyevam Yakshavittasya Chudasyo Bhaya Lokataha Dharma Kama Vihinasya Chukrudu Panchavagina. That verse. 5th, I think 9th verse. Isn't it? Tasyevam Yakshavittasya. We must know this word, what it means, this Yakshavittasya. In that word, this thing, Krishna is talking about, you see, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha begins from the second verse. He's going to talk about that Brahmana in Avanti, who was a bhikshu, isn't it? Made a lot of money. Lot of money he made. Maybe more than what the bankers have made. Lot more than he made all that. And the interesting thing was, bankers spent freely, but he didn't even spend. He says. So Krishna talks about him in verse 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And finally, he closes about his assessment of that bhikshu, saying that tasevam yakshavittasya. He had a lot of yakshavittam. Yakshavittasya. We'll try to see what it means. So here we have yakshas and rakshasas, isn't it? And their king is Kubera. Kubera is their king. Kubera's brother is Ravana. Ravana. These yakshas have got nature. They will keep a lot of money. They'll collect and keep it. They'll collect and keep it. So, money if it you have not used in this life, you made a lot of money and you left this world one day. Made a lot of money. And if you left this world, it's called Yakshavitam. It is useless. You are considered to be a Yaksha then, not a human being. Money has only a certain use in this world. You can use it for some purpose if it's of any use. And after that, to make money and keep it looking at the passbook or investments and feeling happiness from that, that is what has happened to that Avanti Brahmana. Therefore, Krishna is saying to us, it is called Yakshavitam. Any money, whatever we have generated in this world, hard work or business or whatever it is, ultimately you couldn't use it for any good purpose. And the next person who is going to have it, where is the guarantee he's going to use it for the right purpose? You haven't got any guarantee. So money is concerned, it has only that much value. If you can use it for a good purpose, use it. Otherwise, don't make it. This is the answer, Krishna's instruction. If you are making money and a lot of money comes, use it immediately for a good purpose. If you can't use it, don't keep on working for it to make it. If you do that, Vitesho Yaksha Rakshasa, you will become one of these category, Yaksha or Rakshasa. That is the thing. And that's what that Avanti Brahmana has done. So therefore, Krishna is saying that here, that Yakshavitam means you can't use it. You made a lot, but you can't use it. You have invested in all kinds of things and thinking that, oh, it's all there, it's all there. So many people leave this world in that state, you know that. Very, very rich people. They don't know what to do with it. Then they start a foundation. And then make more karma for themselves with that foundation. Don't use it in the proper way. It will go in all kinds of activities, research, AIDS research. To save the people, I believe. First of all, how did this AIDS were created? Because of your immoral activities. AIDS have come. And then a research for that. And investing money into that. This is the ignorance, avidya behind it. You can see so many rich people, very, very wealthy. They don't know what to do. There's so much money, like the Yakshavitam. But they start realizing it, that they don't know what to do. And ultimately, because there is no spiritual understanding, everything is spent for again creating further karma from that. So there is a story about this. In a long time ago, a barber got a job with a king. The king appointed him as the barber, his barber. So all other barbers, normally barbers don't earn very much in India. They don't. They get very little, isn't it? Here they earn well. So there they don't. In them days, obviously those days, they were very, very poor. So the other this barber who got the job with the king, he was taken care of very well because he's king's barber. So he was given a good position, he was looked after very well. So the other barbers all got very envious of him. So one day it so happened that he was walking through a forest. And at that time, he heard some voice from the sky. So the voice said to him like this, "Do you want gold, which is completely filled in 7 jars, fully filled with the gold?" He said, looking here, suddenly he heard this in the sky. And he answered, "Yes, I want it," he said. "Okay, go home. It will be there," he said. And it seems that the person has ran home without even touching the ground. That fast he was in running home. When he got home and he looked, he saw there were 7 jars of gold sitting there. And he felt immensely happy that he had so much wealth with him, isn't it? So he called his wife and told her, "Look at this." He wanted to share his happiness with the wife. And they opened all the 7 jars and looked at that. So when he looked at them, the 6 jars were full, but the 7th jar was half full and half empty. So half full and half empty. So you know how his thoughts went? "This is not right," he says. He says immediately to his wife, he says, "This is not right. Why this half the jar is not full?" He's asking. He didn't think about other 6. Immediately the mind went in this direction. "Why this is not full?" he was asking her. So he says to her, "We have to fill these jars all full. Bring all your jewelry, what you have got," he said. So she goes and brings all her jewelry, gold jewelry, and he puts that into, puts into the jar. Still the jar is not getting full. Jar is not getting full. So he says, it's amazing, he says. And he says, "I have to get this all the seven jars full." So so he had whatever cash he had, he spent all that and purchased gold to fill it in, to fill the seventh jar. Still it was not getting full. Then he goes to the king and asks the king to borrow some money from the king. And the king got very surprised when he came to him asking for that. So far, of so many years, he has not borrowed any money. He has never asked me for any money. But now first time he is asking, so king said, "All right, I'll give him some money," and gave him some money. He took that cash and went to the gold merchant and purchased gold, brought it, and again filled the jar. So still it's the same. It's not getting full. So this way it went on. After a while he started borrowing from other people to fill the seventh jar. And again he was finding it's not getting full. He sold everything. It was not used. Everything he has done to fill this seventh jar. He was doing it for filling the seventh jar. So many things he has done, but it's not getting filled. It's not getting filled. One day the king asked him, "Why do you look so disturbed?" He said, the king told him, because by this activity started, he was getting very, very disturbed. So the king says to him, "Why are you getting so disturbed?" "So, have you got Yakshavitam?" King says to him, "You're looking at your face, it looks like that," he says. So the barber didn't know what Yakshavitam means. Barber asked him, "What is Yakshavitam means?" He says, "How do you know that?" He says, "This is the nature of this Yakshavitam." The king explained to him that the nature of it, that he will ask from everyone, because king came to know that he is asking for money from everybody, borrowing money from everyone to buy this gold. So he will ask from everybody, and you will say, "You need more, you need more." This thought will develop strongly, but he will not ask at any time, "Will I be able to use all this after filling up all these things?" He will never ask that question. That intelligence he will never have. After making all this money, by all these means, after making it, whether I'll be able to use it or not, he will ask. So, so Yaksha says to him, to the king, that Yaksha has asked me also, seven jars you want the gold. The king is saying this to the Yaksha. The Yaksha has asked me also. So I ask the question back to the Yaksha. Will I be able to use that, all the wealth you are giving it to me? So as soon as I asked this question, the Yaksha ran away. He didn't stay there anymore. You cannot utilize it, in other words. So money, if you have made a lot of money in this world, it will come according to prarabdham, isn't it? If you have a prarabdham to make money, you will make the money. But if you know this principle, that the money, if it is not used, if it cannot be used for the right purpose while living in this world, thinking that it will, you will put it in the bank and make generations after generations, is going to be protected by this wealth, that is yakshavitam. That's not going to, it doesn't happen that way, because that's the way prakriti works. Material nature and karma has its own way of managing the life. We should not take into our head all the responsibility of many, many generations to him. All this is spoken in the story form to make it easier for us. This you can see in the prakriti a lot, in the material nature. Many, many wealthy people, then they have to leave it to the dog or cat, and all sorts of things goes on here, isn't it? All sorts of things happen like that. That is Yakshavitam. That you have made money, but you couldn't use it, and you have left this world without any, helplessly. You have to go. All your time, energy you spend on doing that was Yakshavitam, actually. So, so you can see this happening in more and more in people's life today than any time before. In the past, say before this industrialization and all this happened in a big way, like the way it is today, where people have got this opportunity to travel all over the world and to make money in America or in Australia or somewhere else, where people do that now, isn't it? To make money, they'll go anywhere to make money. But so in the olden days, this opportunity wasn't there. A simple person who worked in a government office, who had a very small income, and that person, he was able to live a life. He had daughters to get married, got married, and he retired from service and got through the family life without too much disturbances. And finally, he was able to spend his retirement years in a peaceful way, in engaging in some spiritual activities. It was possible for that, do that. But today you can see a person who is well educated, who has got so much opportunity for making money. He goes, flies around all over the world, taking up jobs in big companies or starting different businesses. And due to his prarabdham, that money is coming from so much, and he is getting more and more enchanted by that. And he makes so much money, and finally one day he goes from this world. Millions and millions of pounds or dollars is sitting in the bank or in investments, and the man is gone. That is called Yakshavittam. Any money that you cannot use it in this world for a good purpose, and that money is Yakshavittam. In such a case, Krishna's advice is, Krishna is saying about this Brahmana, Avanti Brahmana, this is what he has gone and done. Not knowing anything, why am I making this money for? He wouldn't even give the money to his wife and children. That much he was miserly in his life, everything. And one day, everything gone, isn't it? Everything gone one day. The house got fire, the king caught him and extracted tax from him, more tax. HMRC. HMRC said to him, you're not paying your taxes. All came at the same time. Taxman, the fire, and then what all happened? The thieves entered the house. Because those days the banking system was not complicated like this. Nowadays the bank itself goes. But those days at least you know whatever you kept it at home, it will be there. Only that was stolen. Now you go and keep it somewhere, that whole thing goes away. So anyway, everything happened to him at the same time. That is what that Bhikshugita is talking to us. When that happens, Krishna is analyzing his life in this world. And he says to him, he was the owner of a big Yakshavittam, which he has. That is why he used that word, Yakshavittasya, in that verse in the Bhagavatam. He says like that, isn't it? So, now, the other thing is that before this sophisticated lifestyle, what we have now today, the people lived on a simple income, what they had, and they were able to manage, and they were free from the debt, free from the debts. Today, people have got so much money coming in salaries and all that, but after, if you look at them, after about 10 years, they are applying for bankruptcy. This is also a feature of the modern world. You never see. Nowadays it's acceptable. If I applied for bankruptcy, they'll say to us, in the olden days, to say to someone, I'm bankrupt, it was considered to be a little bit a shameful thing to say to someone that I'm bankrupt. But now that's acceptable, very easily. All you have to do is to declare bankrupt. And the whole system is so funny that's what it's saying here. So, and if you look at him, he has taken so much loan from all the sources wherever it's available. And everywhere he has to pay money. And he's not able to pay. What a mystery this is, isn't it? So, big mystery that is. So, whether we believe it or not, in all the dealings, by keeping your mind in there, it is all there in the Prakriti. In material nature, all these things will happen. Some money, we can utilize it. Some money, we cannot utilize it. We cannot utilize it. Because it's just like an exhibition for us. Ah, it's there. You can keep saying, money is there. In this investment, it is there. You can shell others. So much I invested in this project. So much I invested in this bank. RBS or HSBC or wherever you put a lot of money in there. It's all there. Yes, you can keep saying that, but you can't utilize it. So that money, what is kept like that, is called Yakshavitam. So the owner of all that wealth is Kubera. All the Yakshavitam belongs to Kubera. So this Kubera's role, because that's how it is called, Vitesho Yaksharashasam, he says there, isn't it? Vitesho Yaksharashasam, Vitesho is Kuberan, Yaksharashasam. All the owner of the Yakshavitam is Kubera. So, in Trivannamalai, for example, the famous Shiva temple is there, main temple. All around, there are 8 lingams there, different Shivalingams all around. And they were installed by different devadas. For example, all the 5 material elements, they have installed different Shivalingams there. Varuna lingam, Vayu lingam, Agni lingam. And one of these 8 lingam is Kubera lingam. There's one lingam which is mentioned under his name, Kubera lingam. Now, few years ago, about 40, 50 years ago even, when the main temple, which is in the center, and around them all the other lingams, all other lingams were not taken care of because of lack of funds. They couldn't look after the other temples very well. And when you circumambulate that temple, main temple, which is a distance about 14 kilometers, it's over a gap of about 2 or 3 kilometers, these different lingams appear. So when you come to Kubera lingam, that temple had no problem. There was always money there. And that temple was always maintained well, whereas all the other lingams, like Agni lingam, Vayu lingam, Varuna lingam and all, they didn't have that wealth to look after. Because people used to do what they used to do, they'll go to this Kubera lingam and give all the money there, thinking that he's a wealthy man, so he should give us something. This is mundane thinking, or mentality of the common people, isn't it, who think like that, who approaches God only for their material happiness in life. Yeah. So, so Kubera lingam was always looked after very well. All other lingams had problem. So, Vitesho Yaksharakshasam, Krishna says here. Vitesho Yaksharakshasam. And then, Vasuvanam Pavakaschasmi Meru Shikharinam Aham, Krishna says, isn't it? Vasuvanam Pavakaschasmi, Vasu, among the Vasus I am Pavaka. Pavaka means fire, Agni. Why? Because Agni purifies everything. Everything is purified. And there are different varieties of Agni. Fires have got different. Sapta Jihva, they call it. 7-tongued it has got. Pavaka means one who purifies. Pavitrikaranam. From there the word come Pavaka. Pavaka means to purify something. Who has got the capacity to purify things. That's why it's called Pavaka. And Krishna says here, among the Ashtavasus, 8 Vasus, I am Pavaka. Meru Shikharinamaham, Meru mountain. Among all the peaks, I am Meru. I am Meru. These are all different manifestations of Krishna to take notice of. But more important is the 20th one. Aham Atma Gudakesha. Now the next one.
Purodhasamcha Mukhyam Mam. Vidhi Partha Brihaspati. Sena Nina Maham Skandam. Sarasamasmi Sagaraha. Purodhasamcha Mukhyam Mam. Vidhi Partha Brihaspatim. Sena Nina Maham Skandam. Sarasamasmi Sagara. Purodhasamcha Mukhyam Mam. Vidhi Partha Brihaspatim. Sena Ninam Aham Skandaha. Sarasamasmi Sagara. O Preso Arjuna, know me to be the chief Brihaspati, the lord of devotion. Of generals, I am Skanda, the lord of war, and of bodies of water, I am the ocean. What is the water? I am the ocean. So, here, Purodhasamja Raja Purohidanam Mukhyam Mardhanam Mam Vidhi. जानीहि हे पार्थ बृहस्पतिम्। स हि इन्द्रस्य इति मुख्यः स्यात् पुरोधाः सेनानीनां सेनापतीनाम् अहं स्कन्दः देवसेनापतिः। सरसां यानि देवदाखानि सरांसि तेषां सरसां सागर अस्मि भवामि। सो कृष्ण इस् सेयिङ्ग् बृहस्पति इस् ए रायल् प्रीस्ट् राजपुरोहित् इसने रायल् प्रीस्ट्। सो हू आर् द रायल् प्रीस्ट्? फार् एक्साम्पल् Vasishtha is a royal priest, isn't it? For this whole solar dynasty, Vasishtha is their priest. For the whole solar dynasty, he is the priest. So, Purohit means one who performs Pairohityam. Pairohityam means to know what is good for someone and to do that for him. Hitam. One who knows what is Hitam for us and who one does that, he is called Purohit. Purohit. So, Pairohityam. And he has to know in advance what is good for that person. Only then you can be a proper Purohit. So, for all the demigods, Brihaspati is the Purohit. And Brihaspati is the Purohit. Like Suryavamsham has got Purohit is the Vasishtha Maharshi. Vasishtha Maharshi, isn't it? Krishna also says here, Senaniyam aham skandaha. Skanda is Subramanyam, Kartikeya in other words. So he is another, Skanda has got different names. Subramanyam, Dandhaida Pani, Muruga, Kartikeya, Shanmukha, Kartikeya, Guha, Skanda. All are his different names. So this name Skanda comes in the Upanishads. Upanishads. You will see there in the Chandokyam Upanishad it says Ahara Shuddhau Sattva Shuddhi. There is a whole long verse. There it will mention here who is this Skanda. Who is Skanda spoken there? Skanda is nobody different from Sanat Kumara Maharshi. Out of the four Kumaras, Sanat Kumara is Skanda. It's a story attached to Sanat Kumara, how he became Skanda. What it says here that he is situated in knowledge. One should not unnecessarily study a lot, because then you won't be able to practice it. You'll be studying whole life. You'll never practice it. That's at some point, once you've got the message correctly to your satisfaction, then you should stop the studies and practice it what you have got it, and to get established there. That's more important. So, though especially in Vedantam, this is a difficulty, because Vedantam, there is so much books available with people with realizations. They have written Upanishads commentaries, Bhashyam for Brahma Sutram, Panchadashi, like that, Viveka Chudamani, unlimited books are available. And when you are studying all these things, you will desire will build up inside, I want to study more. And you'll start going after every book, because it's giving you some taste and it's pulling you down into it. But that will not help. And the reason is, at that time, this time will go. You won't get that time to absorb it inside and realize it inside. So, Vedantam is also like that. Because this is known to those who are in the Vedic tradition, what they do, When they are studying Vedantam, they will not study Karmakandam. You know, in Karmakandam is Yajurvedam. Yajurvedam, there is a lot. In fact, 80-90% of Vedam is Karmakandam, which is meant for performing sacrifices, isn't it? So, once you have got the message of the soul and self-realization, then you should not waste your time studying Karmakandam here, isn't it? Karmakandam is mainly of use to you for executing sacrifices, performing sacrifices, it will help. But apart from that, Karmakandam is not of much help. So, once in early days in life, if you have developed that proper understanding, detachment, and renunciation has come inside, then he won't look back into Karmakandam anymore. He will go in the path of realization, Jnanakandam. Especially those who have taken to sannyasam stage, they will not serve Karmakandam at all. They will not take any interest in that. സോ കർമ്മകാന്ഡം ദേ വിൽ നെവർ സ്റ്റഡി ദിസ് കോസ് എ ലിറ്റിൽ പ്രോബ്ലംസ് ഐ ടെൽ യു വാട്ട് ദ പ്രോബ്ലം ഈസ് ട്രഡീഷണലി ടെമ്പിൾസ് വിച്ച് യുവർ ബിൽഡ് ദർ ഓൾ എക്സ്പീരിയൻസേസ് ബേസ്ഡ് ഓൺ ദി കർമ്മകാന്ഡം ഇസ് ഇൻ ഇറ്റ് ഓൾ ദി റൂൾസ് ആൻഡ് റെഗുലേഷൻസ് വിച്ച് ഈസ് ആൾസോ ബോണഫൈഡ് ബേസ്ഡ് ഓൺ ദി താന്ത്രിക വിധി ഇറ്റ് ഹാസ് ബീൻ ബിൽഡ് ആൻഡ് ദി ഡേറ്റ് വർഷിപ്പ് എവറിഥിങ് ഈസ് ഡൺ അക്കോർഡിംഗ് ടു ദാറ്റ് പ്രോസസ് ഇൻ ദി കർമ്മകാന്ഡം ഹൗ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് സ്പോക്കൺ ഇൻ ദി ശാസ്ത്രം but when sannyasis build temples sannyasis won't value it so they will say that we don't need all these things so they because they have not studied karmakandam also they will tend to do things without following the rules which are followed by the those who have built the temples in the normal way the normal way. Majority of the temples are built in the normal way sannyasis didn't build them they were built by the acharyas and also by the kings And when the kings built them, they built in consultation with the Shastram. And the Shastram was studied by those who studied Karmakandam. So the temples were built by those like who follow the rules properly. And they have studied the Shastram and they built the temple. And the kings have built the temples or very wealthy people have built the temple and they will rigorously follow the Shastram. But when sannyasis start building temples, What will happen is they will ignore all of this thing. They'll say, I don't want to do anything with the Karmakanda because they don't know. So they will institute a style of worship which is not strictly according to the Karmakanda. So the general public, they go to these temples, they get confused. They think that, oh, this is different than the temples what we are used to. They'll start looking in a different way. That problem will come here. So Karmakanda, because in the karmakandam what they known as the brahmanam in mantram brahmana brahmachari grastham vanaprastham sanyasam four ashramam according to that mantram brahmanam aranyakam upanishad that is the sequence brahmachari life you are supposed to study all the mantram and in the grihastha life you are supposed to learn all the brahmanam And then, vanaprastham stage, you are supposed to know the Aranyakam. And in the sannyasa stage, you are supposed to know the Upanishads. So, in the sannyasi state, when you start building the temples, you are not familiar with the mantram and the brahmanam aspect of the Vedam. So, when they build the temple, there are so many in the mantram side and brahmanam, because they are for the brahmacharis and the householder, particularly in the brahmanam, that is a part of the Vedam, in the karmakandam there are many prayers which are connected with the material life which are connected with the material life and but sannyasi's brahmanam is not important for him upanishad is important so and for them vedanta shravanam is important hearing vedantam is important for them not this karmakandam they won't hear karmakandam is of no interest to them because in vedantam is all about self realization living escaping from this material existence once for all. Why I'm saying all this is, what happened to Sanat Kumara Maharshi? Sanat Kumara Maharshi went to study Vedam when he was a little boy. Out of the four boys, he went to study Vedam. And he was listening to the Vedam. And in the Vedam, there is this part where demigods and demons fighting each other. Demigods and demons fighting each other. Just like If you watch the TV, two people are fighting there, the hero and the villain. They're fighting. In Bollywood, isn't it? Regularly fighting. So, they're shooting each other or whatever that is. So, they're shooting each other. You go to sleep, sometimes it will come to your mind. Isn't it? Somehow it has gone in. That fighting, what you saw in the... It's possible. Not that it will happen, but it is possible. If your mind was in a very weak state, that it may have gone inside and it will come out in the sleep. So in the deep sleep also, in the dream state, all that fight comes back. So what happens there is, you will create that scene, but instead of the hero, you will be fighting. You will be getting involved in that fight. The fight what happened in the screen. That happens inside you and you will be involved in that fight. This is all natural things in the dream. It can happen to people, isn't it? there what have you done? You have identified there with that hero. If you identified with the hero, suppose in that movie you liked someone who was like your hero in that movie. When you are young, naturally you tend to appreciate all these things. So you start identifying with him, and then he comes into the, and because of your identification, you have taken that position in the fight in the dream, instead of the hero fighting. I'm sure all of us have gone through this, isn't it? Also seen Bollywood movies, definitely would have gone through this. Therefore I'm saying, I have seen it, so it happened to me also, so therefore I can tell you very openly, it has happened. So you start seeing, you identify with that person who was fighting, and in the dream you are fighting, instead of the hero. Hero was fighting on the screen. The same thing happened here also. Our abhimanam, our ego, has taken identity with him, isn't it? Sanatkumara Maharshi had a similar situation. What happened was that he went, he was observing this fight, he listening to this mantra, because they are very sharp, isn't it? Kumaras are very sharp in knowledge. So naturally, by hearing this mantra regularly recited between the demons and the demigods, he was listening to that. So a samskaram has developed inside him, this fighting samskaram between asuras and the devadas. This samskaram, because of Veda Shravanam, because of hearing the Vedam, this samskaram has developed inside him. And he noticed that in one night, in a dream, he thought he has taken over the position of Subramanya there, as the commander-in-chief of the army of the demigods, and he was fighting in his dream as the commander of the demigods, and he was fighting that. And this appeared to him in his dream, so he went and asked Lord Brahma about this. What is this happening to me that I have got? Brahma says, that cannot happen. You are a Brahmanishta. You are situated in the Brahman, isn't it? Remember that four Kumaras asked Krishna the whole in the 13th chapter, Hamsa Gita, is between Krishna and the Kumaras. Krishna talking to the Kumaras. So how could this happen to them? That was the question. And you don't have any sankalpam inside, because you are Brahmanishta, isn't it? If it is like that, and if any sankalpam has come to you like this, then that sankalpam has to happen. He said, you cannot get yourself free from that. It has to happen, he said, because it has come now. Once it has come to a sankalpam like that, that means by now, remember I mentioned this before, first it is a thought wave, chittavritti. Chittavritti, when it gets, the line gets thickened and thickened, it becomes a samskaram. Once it has become a samskaram, it is difficult to take it away. And then if it has become a vasana inside, then it has to get it done. You have to get it done. And that's the only way vasana will go from inside. If it has become a vasana. So, it different depending on the strength of that thought wave. If the thought wave is very feeble inside, and if you are able to free yourself from that thought, then that thought wave may not disturb you. It is only a thought wave. It comes and goes. But if you have strengthened that thought further and further, and if it becomes very firm inside, that single line has become very thick line inside, and it has become what is known as samskaram. And if it has become a samskaram, and if it has become very deep, samskaram, very deeper level, then it has become a vasana. That is the progress, how it happens. If it has become a vasana, then you can't do anything. You have to accept another body, come here, get through that vasana and go. That's all you can do. That is why prarabdham is called prarabdha karma vasana. That's how it is called, prarabdha vasana. Prarabdham is nothing but vasana, which is fully matured, fructified in other words. Fully fructified, ready to go through. And that is what our body is doing at the moment. It is going through its prarabdha vasana, is coming through this body. So, Sanatkumara Maharshi mentioned this. So, Brahma told him that you have no choice, he said, that it has become a vasana in you now. It has become, because of this, hearing the Vedam like this for so long time, karmakandam of the Vedam. So he said, Brahma told him that it has to become mature. There is no other escape route, he said. So he kept quiet. Sanat Kumara Maharshi kept quiet. While sitting like that, Shiva and Parvati came there. They were traveling and they came there. Sanat Kumara Maharshi was sitting there quietly. And when they saw Sanat Kumara Maharshi sitting there, they felt an attachment to them. Who? Shiva and Parvati felt some attachment to Kumaras. Kumara, young little boy, isn't it? So they gave their darshanam to him. They appeared in front of Sanat Kumara Maharshi. So when you are performing penances and austerities, demigods will come and give their darshanam even without being called. If the tapasya is very strong, they will appear in front of you. You can see this in many places in the Bhagavadam. Many places you will see this in the Bhagavadam. If you perform tapasya, they will appear in front of you. And they will give you, ask you, what benediction do you want? Like you can see, Priyavrata did that. His son Agnidra did that. Agnidra performed penances. And Indra immediately understood that this man is performing penances, sent Viprachiti, Purachiti to him. So, Indra knew what is the desire inside. Who? Agnidra's inside. So he sent Purachiti there because that's what he wanted, to marry an Apsaras woman. So she was sent in front of him. And that's what happened. So you can see this, that whoever is performing these austerities, severe tapasya, in front of them, without being called, they'll go. Without being called, they will go to him. Like Shiva and Parvati has appeared here. Where else you find in the Bhagavadam, in front of Prachetas, Shiva and Parvati went there also. Isn't it? Prachetas were performing penances, Narayana Sarasa. Shiva and Parvati went there, in front of them. Markandeya Maharshi, remember we spoke about? In front of them, Shiva and Parvati appears there. So, same way, Sanat Kumara Maharshi didn't get up when they came, didn't pay his obeisances. And not because of pride, don't get wrong, because they are, Sanat Kumaras are elder to Shiva. Age they are elder, and by knowledge also they are the top notch. In other words, on the top level, isn't it? So, not due to pride that he didn't pay obeisances, because he was in a state completely absorbed in the self. No consciousness. Fully absorbed in the self, he was sitting like that. So, Shiva got surprised seeing this state. Shiva will know if it is done due to ego. They will know that, if you are doing it due to ego. But he could see that, Shiva could know that it was not due to ego. They will know that. So, inside his mind, or he felt that there is no necessity to pay obeisances to anyone, no necessity to honor anyone, because in his inside there is no separation, that he is separated from Shiva, separated from Vishnu, that separated existence. Mind is not working there, you see. Only when the mind is working, all this apply. When the mind is not working, completely on the platform of the soul, he was not feeling any separation. But here, in your mental plane, mental platform, manomandalam, if it is remains as a thought, then immediately Shiva will know it. It's coming from the mind. So subtle, they can see through your inside. Shiva and Parvati, both of them can see that. If it is coming from the ego or if it's coming from realization. Isn't it? But children won't know it. That is what mistake happened to that little boy. Who? Shamigrishi. With Shringi. Shamigrishi and Parikshit also. Parikshit made the mistake there. Parikshit came and looked and thought that it is his ego. That is why he is not paying respects to me. I am the king has come. That's how Parikshit thought. Isn't it? Whereas the Shamigrishi, he was in a realized state. Very specifically mentions in the Bhagavatam. If you look, you will see there. Why it was mentioned is for only this reason. That you don't misunderstand things. What it says there, if you look at the first canto, when it comes to that, It is on the See the 26th verse in the 18th chapter. See how carefully they have used the words. This is an indication of that state, what he was. If you look into the 26th verse of the 18th chapter. Pradirudhendriya pranam manobuddhi uparatam sthanatrayal param praptam brahmabhudam avikriyam. This was his state. Who? Shamigarshi. He says here, sthanatrayal param, that means beyond the three states. Jagrat, Sopnam, Sushupti. Sthanatrayam. Sthanatrayam means these three states. Sthanatrayam. So beyond the three states he was existing. Parikshit did not know this. Parikshit did not know this. That's a mistake Parikshit made. So therefore, param praptam brahma bhudam avikriyam. He thought he is in a mrusha samadhi. Mrusha samadhi means false, cheating samadhi. Mrusha samadhi, he thought. And therefore, he, Parikshit, interpreted in his own mind about the about that rishi, saying that, oh, he is trying to fool me by keeping his eyes closed and doesn't want to do anything for me, didn't want to offer me a glass of water, wants to cheat me. That's why he is doing that. But that is not Parikshit's fault, because he didn't have the knowledge of the self. So that's what happens. Whereas that mistake won't happen to Shiva or Parvati. They could very clearly see Sanat Kumara Maharshi and see that Sanat Kumara Maharshi was what we call as trance, isn't it? In the trance or transcendental state, beyond the three states. So that's what happened. So, so here, when he looked at inside, normally if it was coming from false ego, it will be a thought wave inside. Anything that comes from the false ego is a thought wave, isn't it? It's a thought wave. This is not like that. So therefore, in a very natural way, he could see that, who Shiva and Parvati could see that, without any kind of adulteration, in a very natural way, and without any trace of false ego, in that state he was situated. In that state he was situated. So when Shiva and Parvati appeared there, Sanat Kumara Maharshi looked at them. Shiva asked him, "We are very happy by seeing you like this," he said. "Very happy by seeing like this. So ask for some benediction," he said. "Ask for some benediction. This is their karma, this demigod's karma." Then they see someone, they will ask them, "What benediction do you want?" That's their problem. That's their problem. A kind of an addiction, you can say. So whomever they see, they have to give a benediction or some blessing they have to offer. Sanat Kumara Maharshi says to him, "I have not asked for anything." That was his reply. Sanat Kumara Maharshi says to Shiva, "I have not asked for anything." But they are saying to him, no, we want to give you something. Sanat Kumara Maharshi says, "I don't want anything." He says, naturally you can understand, because he has reached that state, what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, he is in the top level of that. Which one? Prajahadi yada kaman sarvan partha manogadan. All that stage is gone for them long ago. By birth itself they were jnanis, isn't it? Realized souls. Kumaras, when they were born from Brahma's heart, they were jnanis, realized they were. So that means, this desiring something, they don't even know what it means. Desiring means. For us, that's all what we know. That's the only thing what we know. We have this Sanat Kumara Maharshi is unknown to us, isn't it? A personality. And for Sanat Kumara, we are unknown. Our state is unknown to them. So this is the difference. So here what happened was, Sanat Kumara Maharshi says to him, "I don't want anything," he said. Somebody comes to you and says, forces you, ask. You are saying, "No, I don't want anything. Don't force me." He says, "No, I have something. I'll give you something." So Sanat Kumara is kept on rejecting it. Because only if you have some desire inside, it will come out, isn't it? But there's no desire, what can you do? So, and desire will only be there if you think there is something different from the soul. If something is existing outside the soul, only then desires will come up inside, isn't it? So, that is called adhyasam. That is how we have come to this state where we are now with Adhyasam. Adhyasam is the word in the Shastram. So they don't have Adhyasam. Who? Sanatkumara Maharshi and all don't have any Adhyasam inside. He kept saying, I don't want anything, he said. After a long time, Sanatkumara Maharshi says to Shiva, I think, he says to Shiva, this giving these blessings and take cursing and all is your normal lifestyle, is it? He says to Shiva, who Kumara says to him, and if you want anything, I'll give it to you, he says. Kumara says to Shiva this. He is treating Shiva in a different way, not like the way we treat Shiva. He's saying to Shiva that if you want something, I'll give it to you. But I think for you, this is a habit, it has become like this, asking, taking and giving and taking like this. So actually, Parvati Devi was waiting for this opportunity, for Sanatkumara Maharshi to say this. As soon as Sanatkumara Maharshi said this, if you want something, I'll give it to you. Parvati says to him, says to Shiva, tell him to take birth as our son. This is how he fell into the trap. That's how Sanatkumara Maharshi came and took birth as their son, and he became Subramanya. And then that Subramanyam had to take birth as Kanda, as Kartikeya, and Samba in Krishna's pastime. Krishna and Jambavati. Jambavati's son is Samba. And that Samba is Subramanya. And that Subramanya is Skanda. And Skanda is Sanatkumara Maharshi. This is that connection between them. So Samba was very beautiful, good-looking boy. He was very good-looking, like Subramanya was. Not only good-looking, he created a lot of trouble later, didn't he? He went to Hastinapur and one day he decided that Duryodhana's daughter, I want to marry her. And because Duryodhana was not going to marry her to him, he decided to go and get her from there and escape with her from there. So he went and caught Duryodhana's daughter, and Duryodhana and all the Kaurava army turned against him, caught him there. He was young, very young boy, and then tied him down there. And then Balaram and others had to go to Hastinapur and threaten them to release them. And finally Duryodhana decided, because Bhishma and Drona and others advised him that if you don't do anything, Balaram is going to smash the whole place down. So then they was handed over back to Balaram, and then they brought Samba back, isn't it? The Samba story is there in the Bhagavatam, famous story. So that Samba, Subramanya or Sanatkumara Maharshi here, when Shiva and Parvati were saying this to them, when finally he got bored with this request from Shiva, ask for some blessing, I'll give it to you. He says, no, if you want something, I'll give it to you, he said. That if that's the case. And Parvati was waiting for this opportunity. Parvati says to Shiva, tell him that to take birth as our son. So Shiva says to him, to Sanatkumara Maharshi, can you take birth as our son? So Sanatkumara was very clever. He says to him that you have asked me, so I can take birth as your son, not Parvati's son. I won't take birth from a womb of a mother like that. And if you can give birth, then I'll take birth, he said. I will not enter into the womb of a woman, he says like that. Similarly, it is at that time, from Shiva's third eye, a light came out from the Jyotis, and that knowledge that came out from that fire is Skanda. Is Skanda. So that Skanda, how he became the head of the, he was very able commander in the fighting, and he was appointed as the commander-in-chief of the demigods. So that is what Krishna is saying here. That Skanda who was born, that's me. Senanīnām aham Skanda, says here, isn't it? Senanīnām aham Skanda, says. Senanīnām, Purodhasamchi mukhyamam vidhi partha brihaspadim senanīnām aham Skanda sarasamasmi sagara. So we'll have a break.
चेदोदर्पणमर्जनं वोमः दावाग्निनिर्वापणं श्रेयकैतवचन्द्रिकावितरणं विद्यावधूजीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपदं पूर्णामृदास्वादनं सर्वात्मास्वपनं परं विजयदे श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम्. നാംനാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജസർവശക്തി തത്രാർപ്പിതാ നിയമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാല ഏതാദൃശം തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവാൻ മമാഭി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാജനിനാനുരാഗാഃ തൃണാരഭി ശുനീചേന തരോരഭി സഹിഷ്ണുന അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി നധനം നജനം നസുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശകാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരേ ഭവദാത് ഭക്തിരഹൈതുകി ത്വയി ഐ നന്ദതനുജകിങ്കരം പതിതാമാം വിഷമേ ഭവാംബുദോ കൃപയാ തവ പാദപങ്കജസ്ഥിതധൂളി സദൃശം വിചിന്തയ യുഗായിദം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിദം ശൂന്യായിദം ജഗൽ സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണ മേ നയനം ഗലദശ്രുധാരയ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകേർ നിജിതം കഥാവപു തവ നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരദാം പിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിധതാ ദുലംബന നത്പ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നയേമനാ പരാഹ.
So Krishna says that skanda, what he says here, that senaninam aham skanda, this skanda who has come from Shiva, from his third eye, from the fire, he was born from the fire, therefore he is also addressed here as skanda. Is that senani aham skanda, skanda is also a personification of knowledge, personification of knowledge, because in the Puranam there is a instance where skanda instructs Lord Shiva about transcendental knowledge. So this deva mentions here Devasainyam, Devasenapati is called, demigod's army. It's not only physical army commander, not in that sense. He's also Devi Sambhata. That means we have two things, isn't it? Demonic nature and the divine nature. So divine nature, that knowledge, the goal, that is also in controller of that is Skanda. The divine nature's controller is Skanda. The knowledge, divine nature. Remember in the Bhagavad Gita there is a chapter, divine and demoniac nature. These are subtle things. It's very difficult to talk about it too much because Devi Sambhat, that is what is in charge actually. So, Senaninam aham skanda sarasam asmi sagaro. That's another interesting thing. Sarasam asmi sagaro, Krishna says. Of all the lakes, I am the ocean. That's how Krishna puts it there. That's very nice, isn't it? Of all the lakes, I am the ocean. Why did he say like that? That's a good question, because lake is lake and ocean is ocean, isn't it? You can't compare like that. Reason is that sometimes people who have not seen this ocean, there are many people who are living right in the middle of the country, for example, who have not gone to the seaside, they have not seen the sea. There can be like that people, isn't it, who have lived very interior in the land, who have not seen the ocean. For them it is difficult to understand the vastness of the ocean. Krishna is saying sarasam asmi sagara. In other words, the only way you can show them is that you take them to a large lake and show them this is a lake and ocean is bigger than this. That's how you can present it to them, because you can't physically take them to the ocean and show to them, isn't it? So similarly, this Sarasamasmi Sagara is a statement like that. It's a big lake, that's all. But those who have not seen the lake, Krishna uses the word Sarasa. Sarasa means a smaller place of water. Sarasa. So Sarasa, if you see the Sarasa or lake from there, you have to imagine Sagaram is much bigger than that. That's all. So when someone who was in the land, he could not, he hasn't seen the sea, ocean. So he was saying, how big is it, he said. So somebody else took him to a big lake and showed him, look at it, he said. So he said, oh, this is the ocean, he said. No, this is a lake, he said.
but ocean is much bigger than this. That's what it is, he said. So in a joking way, he explained to him like that. So, Sarasamasmi Sagara. Then the next words.
Maharshina Bhrugurham Giramasmyegamaksharam Yajnanam Jabayajnosmi Stavaranam Himalayah Maharshinam Bhrugurham Giramasmyegamaksharam Yajnanam Jabayajnosmi Stavaranam Himalayah Maharshinam Bhrigu Aham Giram Vajam Padalakshananam Egam Aksharam Omkaram Asmi Yajnanam Jabayajnam Asmi Stavaranam Stidimadam Himalayam Asmi. That is how Krishna says. Maharshinam Bhrigurham Giram Asmi Egam Aksharam Yajnanam Jabayajnosmi Stavaranam Himalaya.
So, Krishna says, of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy name, Japam. And of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. So, here,
Bhrigu. Bhrigu's feet, Bhrigu kicked Vishnu. You know that story in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Bhrigu kicked Vishnu. And it became a mark on Vishnu's chest, which is known as Srivalsam. Srivalsam on Vishnu's chest. And Krishna says that Bhrigu is me. There are various relationships. Bhrigu's daughter is Lakshmi. Lakshmi is married to Vishnu. But it is not due to that, but it is due to this. Due to that instant, what happened, the incident. You know that story, don't you? That it is, the all the rishis met together and they wanted to find out among the three, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, who is the most glorious one. They wanted to test them. So they decided to send Bhrigu to find out who among them, who is the greatest. So first he went to Brahma. And when he went to Brahma, Brahma is the father, Bhrigu is the son, isn't it? So father is not supposed to get up from the seat. He didn't get up. So Bhrigu went there and he didn't pay any respects to Brahma. Brahma was expecting some respect be offered by Bhrigu. Bhrigu didn't offer any respect. So Brahma got angry with him. So Bhrigu says, "You're useless. I'm going," he said. He didn't recommend Brahma as, because Brahma got angry. So he said, "You are not in the higher state. You have actually got upset because I didn't offer any." Deliberately he did that. And Brahma felt Brahma didn't know that he has come to examine or verify the glory of Brahma. There was a competition between Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva was going on. This was not known to Brahma at that time, because the rishis decided, sages decided to verify this, isn't it? But what happened was, when he was going to see Shiva, the next one, to Shiva. When he went to see Shiva, Shiva saw Bhrigu coming. So Shiva is always covered in ashes and the snake around his neck and all that. Normal people find it difficult to relate closely with Shiva. But when Bhrigu came, Shiva was very happy. "My brother has come." So he wanted to go and embrace him, Bhrigu. Brother has come, after a long time was coming. Sri Parvati was also there. He wanted to receive Bhrigu. So when he tried to embrace him, Bhrigu said, "Don't touch me," he said. "You are very dirty with all these ashes and the skull around your neck, everything, with the garland, everything." And as soon as Bhrigu said, Shiva got angry very much. And Shiva was going to take his trident and kill him, seeing his arrogance. So before that, Brahma's wife, Saraswati Devi, phoned Sri Parvati and told her that he is coming like this, tell Shiva to be careful. He has come with a mission. Something like that happened through mobile or landline, I don't know how he called. Some of the message was given to Sri Parvati. So Sri Parvati went and held Shiva and told him not to get upset with him. He has come with a mission. So don't get angry with him. Then Shiva tried to pacify him. But meanwhile, Bhrigu said, no, I don't want to stay here. You also don't come up to the mark, and left. Then he went to Vaikuntham. This was in Kailasam, this happened. Then he went to Vaikuntham. And in Vaikuntham, what happened was, when he went there, happily Vishnu is lying down with the feet massaged by Lakshmi Devi. And he was snoring there in Yoganidra state. So Bhrigu again felt, none of them seems to have any manners to respect the sages come and to get up and offer some respects or receive properly. They don't know any one of them. So he was going to categorize Vishnu also in the same way. And just to test it, he kicked Vishnu's chest with his feet. And Vishnu woke up. When he woke up, he asked Bhrigu, oh, I'm so sorry that I didn't offer you proper respects. And he apologized to him, saying that, is your feet got hurt by kicking my hard chest? This is how Vishnu put it. Seeing that humility, Bhrigu concluded that Vishnu is definitely the superior among the three, and goes back and reported this incident to the rishis present there, sages present there. So it is from that kick that mark has come, Shrivalsam, on Vishnu's chest. And that remained as a mark permanently for Vishnu, Shrivalsam. Therefore, Krishna is saying, therefore, among them, I am Bhrigu. Among them, Bhrigu, because I carry him on my chest. Then, among the Pranavam, that is the next one, isn't it? Giram Asmiyagam Aksharam, he says. Giram Asmiyagam Aksharam. Pranavam, that is Om. Among all the sound, I am Pranavam, Om, Krishna says. So why is that? All sound, its origin is Pranavam, Om. Om is the Pranavam. Pranavam is the Om, isn't it? So you will see, Ekam Aksharam Hridi Nirandaram Vasvade Swayam Labhyade Katham. In other words, this one letter, Om, from there all other sound vibrations have come. Hridi Nirandaram, and it is this Pranavam's manifestation, what you are experiencing as Aham Aham in the heart. That is the vibration of the Pranavam inside. Egam Aksharam, this letter, Pranavam, Hridi Nirandaram, continuously in the heart, Bhaswade Swayam, always illuminating inside, Nityade Katham, it is available to us. Pranavam is what is available to us. That is why chanting this Om, Pranavam, and this Aham realization, Aham Alpma Gudakesha, has a close connection with that. Mainly because this chanting and that Om letter is closely connected. Because the Mula Swarupa, Mula Swarupa means, for all the sound vibration, its original form is this Om. And in other words, you can say the primeval form of the sound. We call it as Om. And you know, in the sound language, in the sound technology, what they call it as Avyahridam. Avyahridam and Vyahridam. Avyahridam means the Mula Swarupam, or in other words, the primeval form of the sound is Avyahridam. Avyahridam it is called. Om. And when it comes to Vyavaharam, it changes, isn't it? You know that four stages when it passes through the sound. Para, Pashyandi, Madhyama, Vaikari. When it comes into Vaikari, it is already impure. Because why? It's polluted with the mind. Mind is touched that. Mind is touched by the Madhyama stage. You see here, the Vedantam and Yogam combines together. In Yogam, we have these chakras inside, isn't it? Kundalini that goes through different chakras, starting from the Mooladharam, സ്വാധിഷ്ഠാനം, മണിപൂരകം, അനാഹതം, വിശുദ്ധി, ആജ്ഞ, സഹസ്രാരം, ദ ഡിഫറെൻറ്റ് ചക്രാസ് ഇൻ ദ ബോഡി. സോ വെൻ ദ സൗണ്ട് വിച്ച് ബിഗിൻസ് ഫ്രം ദി ബോട്ടം മോസ്റ്റ് പാർട്ട്, വെൻ ഇറ്റ് സ്റ്റാർട്ട്സ് ഗോയിങ് ത്രൂ ഡിഫറെൻറ്റ് ചക്രാസ്, ഇറ്റ് ഗെറ്റ്സ് ചേഞ്ച്ഡ്. പരാപശന്തി, മധ്യമ, വൈഖരി, ദിസ് ഹാപ്പൻസ് ഇൻ ഫോർ ഡിഫറെൻറ്റ് ചക്രാസ്. After it has passed through this Vishuddhi Chakram, it comes through this lips. Before it goes through the Ajna and Sahasraram. Ajna, Vishuddhi, Sahasraram. So Ajna Chakram, it comes and comes out through in the form of, that is the yoga side of it. So there the yogam comes, and on the other side the sound side of it, Om, how it goes through. The Sthula Rupam, that means when we say Om with the lips, it's a gross form of it. What we speak through as Om, if we chant Om, Om Ajnanatimirandhasya, then we start with every mantra is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. All mantra starts with Om. But the Om, what we pronounce it, by the time it has become very gross in a verbal form, it comes out. Sthulam, that is what comes through this, isn't it? But all the sound, Vedam is sound, isn't it? Shabda Brahmam it is called. The root of all these things is only one letter, that is Om. So it is from Om the Vedam has come. Vedam has come from Om. In order to know Om, you have to study the Vedam. So because we do not know, Om, that is why we have to teach everyone Vedam. Vedam is taught for this purpose. Who says this? Because we do not know Om, we have to teach this Vedam in such a elaborate way. Vedam is very elaborate, isn't it? Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. Then the four Vedas, Upanishads, and all the associated literature. All this thing is taught to know this letter Om, from everything comes. In other words, Om is direct manifestation of Krishna in the sound form. That's all it is. In sound form. And Sanal Sujata Maharshi, who came talk to Dhritarashtra, he mentions this in the Mahabharatam, that because we can't understand Om, therefore we have to study the whole Vedam to know Om. To know Vedam. Ega Vedasya Avijnanat Veda Shabdaha. He says like that. In the Sanal Sujata Maharshi says this. The root which is Om, we cannot know that, therefore we have to study this Vedam, which is like an ocean to study. So, and only very little to know. If you know Om, you have known it, got it. But to know Om is difficult, isn't it? So, this sound, Om, and that's primordial form, what they call it as Nada Brahmam. If you look into Bhagavatam, who said this? Balram. As Sankarshanamurti, he says this. To whom? Chitraketu. When Chitraketu went there to the spiritual world, he told him, I have two sides, he said. Shabda Brahma Param Brahma Mamo Abhe Shashwadi Tanu. In the Bhagavatam you will see this, in the sixth canto. When he went, Chitraketu went there, isn't it? Or Narada Maharshi gave him a good mantra to chant. 7 days time you get there, he said. You will be there. So he chanted 7 day night this mantra. 8th day he arrived there. And when he got there, Sankarshanamurti was there, Balram was there, Krishna wasn't there. So Balram says to him that there is a conversation between Chitraketu and Sankarshanamurti. Sankarshan is Balram. So there, Sankarshanamurti says to him, Shabda Brahmam Parabrahmam. I have two different aspects. One is Shabda Brahmam, other one is Parabrahmam. Parabrahmam is what we call Brahman Brahman in the Bhagavatam. That is Parabrahmam. But there's another aspect to Parabrahmam, which is Shabda Brahmam. That Shabda Brahmam is also called Nada Brahmam. Like people who are serving Krishna through sound, like devotional music. And that who follows that very strictly, who have reached that state of sound realization, that means personalities like Tyagaraja and others, who have done such service to, he chanted how many times? 960 million times Ramchandra's name. Tyagaraja has chanted 960 million times Rama, 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 he chanted. And after that, he was so surrendered to Ramachandra that his bhakti has started flowing in the form of music. And therefore, he was called as Nada Brahma. Because his bhakti has come out in the form of Nada Brahma. So, that's for them, what you have to understand is this. When they write something, that will remain in this world forever. It will never go, because the way they have it has come out through them is after realization. When they write a kirtanam, kirtanam will look same time. Like for example, Tyagaraja's many kirtanam, if you read, they are not very complex to understand. Very simple words. But if you construct a song like that, like the way modern film music and others, they write the music also, isn't it? But it will not have the same impact on the people like the way it was come out from them. Why? The reason is because they are Nada Brahmam. They have that realization, Nada Brahmam. They realize what is called a Shabda Brahmam, not the Parabrahmam. Brahmam's different aspects, that's all. Substance it is the same, but if somebody else writes it in the same way, because in their case, it's not coming from the mind. That's the reason. For example, in films also, they write music, isn't it? Films, for films, they write music. And for the hero or heroine to sing, or prayers also. You know, the people who write music, who write songs for the film. I don't know so many people like that. I don't know about the English films, but in Hindi, I know so many out there who write the... in all languages, there are people who write the songs for the films. Prayers, they write. They won't use any of the prayers which are written by the acharyas or anything. These people will write on their own prayers. And they will... Some of them are very musical. And somebody else will give music to it. You know that. That's how it's done, isn't it? So, similar... But if their kirtanam, what they have written... It will not be the same, just like the way Tyagaraja has written, or Purandradas has written, or somebody else has written like that. You will never get that same feeling from them. The reason is, these people are writing from the mind, they have written from their consciousness, from the soul. It's coming directly because of the realization inside. So, so that is why it's not from the material world. And they have gone and touched this sound, Om, inside, that sound. Therefore, para pashyanti madhyama vaikari, we say that para word, when it comes from them, in their vaikari, there is a taste of that. When it comes through their lips as vaikari, there is a taste of that para in them, because they have experienced it. Whereas the man who wrote the music for the movies, he doesn't have any. He's one like us, isn't it? Who, only thing is, they call it as carpentry of words. He picks up words and put it together. You can write, for example, if you know Palayamam, Pahi Pahi, you can write a song easily. It's not very difficult. You have to know few names of Krishna. And you add Pahimam, Pahimam, like this song, for example, I'm saying, Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Isn't it? Rama, 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 Raghava, Rama, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. So like that, one or two words you have to know. And you take some words from Krishna's names and you put it together. But and in words, if you see Tyagaraja's songs, very much similar to this. But why they are popular and these won't stay? Reason is, in Tyagaraja's case, it comes after realism. They have gone and touched the sound Om inside. And because it is a touch of the Paranadam it's called. Because it has a touch of the Paranadam, when it comes out as Vaikari, it is pure. It is pure. And that taste of Paranadam is in the Vaikari. Whereas the person who wrote the songs for the sound for the film, he doesn't have Para or Pashyanti or Madhyama. It's pure Vaikari, that is. Completely coming from the vasanas inside. So that is why Krishna is saying here that Giramasmiyega Aksharam. Giramasmiyega Aksharam. That glory of that letter Om. Then he says, Yatnyanam jabayatnyosmi. Yatnyanam jabayatnyosmi. Yatnyam. Yatnyam is an important thing in the Bhagavad Gita. If you look into the 3rd, 4th, 5th chapter, all talking about yatnyam, isn't it? How to perform yatnyam. How to perform yatnyam. You require a lot of things for yatnyam. Yatnyam, yagam, all these things. So, The problem with this yajnam that sometimes in the yajnam there is animal sacrifices, killing of animals. And therefore it is not always the best. It's not always the best. Like Ashwamedham, you have to kill a horse there, isn't it? Ashwamedham. And there are many other yajnams also, their animal sacrifice is involved. But this yajnam, what Krishna is saying here, yajnam japa yajnosmi, chanting the holy name doesn't require any such fault, any problems with that attached to it. Nothing else to be done. So if you continuously chant the holy name, that is a yajnam. That is a yajnam. And doesn't matter if you chant the holy name and if you live a disciplined life, but if you chant the holy name without any material desires, without any material desires, it will become a yajnam. But as soon as desires come in, and with some motive, if it is conducted, then it is not a yajnam. For example, many people chant many different mantras with some motivation behind it. Isn't it? Some motivation. That is not yajnam. That is not yajnam. For example, to please certain devatas, there are certain mantras people chant. Like our, Dhrumaraj committed a mistake. He had desires inside. So when he chanted that Dwadashakshari Mandram, finally Krishna came and says to him, 36,000 years you remain as a king, because the desire was inside. Therefore, although he chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, still he had to go through that experience of remaining as a king. Later on, he regrets about it, isn't it? Who? Dhrumaraj regrets about it. While going back, what a mistake have I made, he says. That I should not have made, that desire was inside me and Krishna has sensed that. And that is why he sent me back to rule the planet. I should have, having given an opportunity to escape from here, I didn't utilize it, he says. Like that, I still have to stay here for another 36,000 years. So people chant mantra with various goals in their mind. They may not tell you everything, but they do have different desires. That is why there are mantram like that. For example, there is a whole shastram attached to mantram. Mantra shastram it's called. Which mantram to chant for what purpose? And if you take the instructions and properly follow it up, it can end up in getting the results also. So with the result, you can control others. There is mantra for that. To attract wealth, there is mantra for that. And to get certain demigods under your control. There are certain, out of 330 million demigods, many of them can be controlled by the human species. Many of them. And they have mantra for that to bring them, to do, make them to do what you want them to do. So for example, this is mostly in the Atharvana Vedam. This Atharvana Vedam is like that, that suppose you want to do damage to someone, and you have a very strong ill feeling, enmity towards him, and instead of directly dealing with him, you have these devatas available, whom you can please them. And there are people who teach this mantra, who practice this mantra and all that. This is all part of that black magic side of it, all those things. So, that is not yajnam. None of this is yajnam. Yajnam is that only what is done without any desire, without any fruitive desires. And anything, any yajnam performed with a desire is not considered to be yajnam. So, one who performs yajnam, actually it is in his heart. So, otherwise, another name of Krishna is yajnam. Yajnyovai Vishnu. That is a word you will see there in the Upanishads. Wherever there is sacrifice, wherever there is giving up things without any expectation of results, there Krishna is present. There Krishna is present. So in that case, it will be a yajnam. It will be a yajnam. So therefore, that is why sometimes we say Sankirtana yajnam, isn't it? Jnana yajnam. Srimad Bhagavatam Saptaham is a Jnana yajnam. Because if it is conducted without any motivation, simply with the goal of transmitting transcendental knowledge to others, then it is a jnana yajnam. Similarly, you can see that there are all sacrifices, wherever Krishna is present, then it is a yajnam. Yajna's prasanna. That means that yajnam should be fully unmotivated. Unmotivated. Only in that case it is a yajnam. Unmotivated, freedom from desires. In that case it is a yajnam. So that means practically sacrifice, tyagam, is the key behind it. In Mahabharatam there is a story about this. You may all heard this story, I'm sure. There was one mongoose which came, and he Rajasuyam sacrifice was going on. He came, and Yudhishthira Maharaj and Krishna were sitting there, and this mongoose came. You know what mongoose means? Yeah, I don't know. Well, you do, I have not seen it here, but it comes, and mongoose and this snake, they are enemies each other. Mongoose doesn't get bitten by the poison of the snake. So therefore, snakes are worried about the mongoose. Mongoose are very inimical to the snakes also. So the mongoose came, and one mongoose came, half of its body was golden, half the other body was normal. So he came, and after the sacrifice was over, in the dust, this mongoose started rubbing its body. It was turning upside down in the body and trying to and looking at its own body. And afterwards, mongoose said something and left. So Yudhishthira Maharaj asked him, "What is to Krishna, what is that mongoose is talking about?" So Krishna says to him that mongoose is saying that this is not a sacrifice proper. Rajasuyam is saying, which Duryodhana has spent, Dharmamutra Maharaj has spent so much money and so many people participated. He says, this is not a yajnam, he says. So then he is telling the story that he went to a village and there was a brahmana there. And brahmana was very fixed in the spiritual life, very fixed in spiritual life. But he had his wife and the son and his family, everybody was there. And they were living out of unchavurti. They used to beg and live on that, what they got from that. But they were so austere and they were very brahminical in their consciousness, giving nature, in other words. So one day Indra wanted to test them. So Indra came as a guest for them and told them, "I want something to eat," he said. So Brahmana offered whatever little food they had, which they brought after begging and brought. His portion, Brahmana gave it to him. And then Indra says, who has disguised in this form, who has come as a guest, he says to him, "Still hungry," he said. So his wife gave everything what she had, her portion, she gave it to him. Again, this guest says, "I'm still hungry," he said. So everybody gave their portions like this, one after the other. And they were so poor, so much in poverty, and they were in great hunger. They were experiencing at that time. It is then that this happened, this incident happened. So while so hungry, Indra has come and tested their resolve. And everything was given to Indra. At that time, Indra shown his real form to them and says, "The yajnam what you have performed is proper yajnam," Indra says to them. And saying this, he took all of them to the heavenly planets. Indra took them to the heavenly planets. And after the sacrifice was over, this mongoose has gone there and he was moving around in that dust. And immediately half of his body has become golden color. Half of his body, golden color. So he says here that in this I have done this, but nothing has happened. He says, after Yudhishthira Maharaj's this famous Rajasuyam, he says, so that is why it is said. So Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Krishna, "Why is that our yajnam is not like that?" So Krishna says, the difference is, all your wealth, how did it come? You've gone and taken in from, defeated many kings and brought their gold from east to west, north, south, everywhere. You send Sahadeva one direction, Nagula in another direction, Bhima in one direction, Arjuna in another direction. And you had engaged in war with many kings and they had to hand over everything to you. So it was not even the acquired wealth was not even acquired properly. And therefore, it is not as high as that Brahmana's wealth is, he said. So anyway, Yudhishthira was answered in this way. So, this mongoose said like this, that since that experience I had with this Brahmana, wherever any yajnam happens, I go and do this there. And I check myself, everywhere what I find is sense gratification, there is no sacrifice anywhere. Because there is no sacrifice, my body is still the same, only half of it has changed. So there, what it's trying to indicate to us, wherever there is any selfish motive, swarthada, if it is there, it is not yajnam. That means anything that is done with a motive, it's not yajnam. It is not yajnam. Any motive, it has to be so freedom from all kinds of motives or any kind of expectations, in other words. That is the only way it should be done. So, those who are doing the yajnam, they should have no motive in them. Only then it will become a yajnam. So, that is why collectively doing yajnam is difficult. Collectively doing yajnam becomes difficult because it's difficult to get everyone to agree. Suppose there are 10 people engaged in a yajnam. A few people will have a thought behind it. So one or two may not have, but others may have some thoughts behind it, some expectation from that, isn't it? So that's why collectively to do it is difficult, but individually one can do it. And the only yajnam which you can do individually is to chant the holy name. That's all. Krishna's name, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. That's all. So, simply by chanting this holy name, all these great devotees, they have reached that state. Like as I mentioned about Tyagaraja, 960 million times he chanted the holy name of Ramachandra. And from that, the experience came, the bliss that came out from that, came through in the form of song from him. That's all. Similarly, with Valmiki. Valmiki chanted Mara, 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 isn't it? And that came out in that way. So, in anywhere, that nishta, that is important. Getting fixed in that. That nishta, without any expectations, if it is carried out, and if it is chanted in that way, he will become realized one day. Jnani, he will become a jnani. That's why Krishna is saying here, yajnam javayajnyosmi. Only thing is, no motivation. Without any motivation. Where you are, in what dress you are, and all these things are not important. Not important. That's all secondary. Is the selfishness inside has gone? If it has, you have to take it out and throw it away from inside. Take it from inside and throw it away. Then you are perfect. So, practically to say, to remove that false ego from inside is yajnam. You see? Yajnam is actually removing that false ego from inside. That is what it is called, yajnam. Chanting is not just vibrating the sound only, isn't it? The consciousness behind that chanting is important. One who chants thinking that people chant with all kinds of motives, isn't it? That's unavoidable because we have such desires inside. People have expectations, various problems in life, material life, various problems, health problems, various other desires inside. It can, various distress in every one of us we have in life. So naturally, it will come through in our chanting also. In a subtle way, we will say to Krishna, if you could cure this problem for me. You may not say it, but it's there inside. If it is done with that understanding, then that chanting is not pure. It's not pure. So that's not a yajnam anymore. So this yajnam, what Krishna is talking about, yajnanam javayajnyosmi, is a very higher state, where it is executed purely for, without any selfish motive. It is executed to please Krishna. That's why it's done, only then it is a yajnam. So, so, throwing away that selfishness inside is the key behind the yajnam. And then, removing that ahangaram, false ego, is a yajnam. Because why Krishna spoke about this chanting the holy name is that you can do that independently. You have to depend on, you don't need to depend on anybody else. Even the mind need not become very attentive. Mind may not be very attentive. Let the mind go its own way. Some people will say, mind is giving us the trouble. But I do not get the concentration and everything. But in such a case, you have to tell the mind, that you buy a ticket for the mind to go on a world tour, let it go, and you keep chanting. That's all. Let it go. But that nishta is important. Nishta means that firm commitment of doing that every day, and that you have to say to the mind, even if the mind is giving problem, without consulting the mind, you have to execute this sadhana of chanting the holy name, without consulting the mind. For example, difficulty comes like this. Sometimes say, I am in a mood today to chant. Today I will chant 64 rounds. Then I have to wait for the next mood to come. That may come only next year. That is not nishta. Nishta means not listening to the mind and doing it. That is nishta. Only then it is nishta. Whether the mind listens or not, mind gives you trouble or not, still sitting down and chanting the holy name. That is japam. If you depend on the mind and you start chanting, he will not help you. He will not cooperate with you. This thing called mind. So just like people say, today I am in a good mood, today I am chanting. Sometimes people say this, I have chanted all my rounds today, they'll say. I finished all my rounds today. That day. Next day? No. Then for a few days? No. Sometimes it got busy, oh, I got caught up in this. I had to catch up, they will say. No, catching up is not allowed in chanting. It has to be done that day. That day if you're not done, it's not done. That's all. I know it is difficult, but what to do? Everything is difficult. Depending on your mood and if you do sadhana, don't trust that. Don't do the sadhana based on the mood. Whether the mood is there or not, then not depending on the mood, but thinking that it is my duty, dharmam, and doing that, that is, you can trust that. Don't trust that mood. Because when the mood comes, you are in a happy mood. You'll be very friendly to others, happy mood. You'll do everything what is necessary. And the mood is not there, you know what will happen. You will bite somebody. So the mood is such a thing. It's coming from the mind, isn't it? So when there is a mood, you will do something good. When there is no mood, you won't do anything. Mood, if it's not the mood, you won't do it also. That is why Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhaja Moodamadhe he called, because of this mood business. Because of the mood only, he's calling us Moodamadhe. Your mind is in the mood, based on the mood. Moodam, Moodaham. Moodhasyasmi, Madhinirni Nasti, Naha Moodamadhi. So whether there is mood or not, or whether you like it or not, do whatever you have accepted to do, we should do it, to chant. That is a resolve you have and has to do it. That is spiritual life, sadhana. The idea behind that is, it's not that you are trying to do something, it's not a contract with Krishna that I am chanting Krishna. It's not a contract, you should also know that. The idea behind that is to discipline that mind, it's necessary. That to discipline the body and the mind, that is why all the sadhana is for. Sadhana is for disciplining yourself, not for any other purpose. Not that I have chanted. Some people are so calculative that they are saying that I have been chanting 25 rounds for so many years. Some people say, now I switched on to 64 or 192, like that. And so that means they are trying to test Krishna. If I am doing more, are you in responding to me accordingly? With this understanding, if you chant, it may not happen. So this counting business also has got its problems. It's not that everything's so straightforward. In surrender to happen, in order to surrender to Krishna, it's only possible when we give up all these conceptions from inside. It has to be unconditional, that surrender. So any sadhana what you perform has to be also unconditional. Otherwise it's not sadhana. Any conditions or strings attached to it is not sadhana. Then it becomes very much in the laukikam, it's not anymore spiritual. It's not anymore spiritual. So that is where it is. So I think we should stop here. We'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.